Honey, look around you. To everyone here who matters, you're vapor. You're spam. A waste of perfectly good yearbook space.
Yours, mine, and theirs.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Yours, Mine, and Theirs, a podcast about movies, podcast about voting, and this time a podcast about high school in the 90s. My name is John, and as a matter of fact, I just sold this very podcast to the Music Town conglomerate, so no dancing allowed from now on.
Hi, I'm Roy, and podcasting with John and Andy makes me feel like I'm Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman, except for the whole hooker thing.
Hmm. I'm Andy Wilson, and let me explain it to you. Mitchell's the man, I'm the idiot, you're the screw-up, and we're all losers. Welcome to Music Town.
I got lost in that summary. Okay, well, welcome again, gentlemen. Welcome back, Andy. Always a good pleasure, and it's always good to know that you prepare so well, more than either of us ever do. Apology accepted for not writing down everything that you usually do, because we don't write down as much stuff as you always do.
I write down quite a bit.
Yeah, my 3 pages of notes in a Word document. Yes.
How corporate of both of you.
I
just wanted to say thanks again for getting Caitlin Tarante on the last podcast. She was really great to have around, and I'm going to try to make friends with her. Interestingly enough, I was listening to her podcast, the Bechdel cast, earlier today because they happened to have done a Bechdel cast on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Empire Records, and She's All That. Oh, wow. It was the only podcast I could find that did all 3 movies. And so that is just kind of a weird coincidence. But those are the 3 movies we're talking about today because those are 3 high school movies that, and those are the 3 that we picked. We didn't pick 10 Things I Hate About You. We didn't pick Can't Really Wait. We didn't pick Scream 2. We didn't pick The Faculty. We didn't pick a vast assortment superior high school movies.
Election, Rushmore.
Election, yeah. Election Rushmore. And I wanted to, I don't know, I think Loser is supposed to not be very good, but that's what I would have picked if I picked, just because it's a movie I hadn't seen, and I believe Amy Heckerling directed that one. Unless it didn't make it, unless it was a 2000 movie, I'm not even sure.
But, and I'm really glad, you know, none of it never came up, but American Pie is one of these quintessential ones, and I'm glad we never even flirted with that. Although I have a real problem that I get She's All That, Can't Hardly Wait, American Pie, and 3 or 4 other movies completely confused about who's in them and what they're doing.
Yeah.
And they share so many of the same cast members, and I'm like, wait, what?
I know. I was waiting in She's All That. I was waiting for Gabrielle Union to come up to Rachel Lee Cook and talk about how she was prepared to sleep with her prom date, and she was planning on doing that. And then I'm like, oh, wait, that was what Gabrielle Union did in 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yeah.
And now She's All That.
So yeah. I'm actually really happy with our choices, though, because we could have ended up with, like, 3 high school romances, which I kind of thought that was the intention behind this category, right? But I didn't word it that way, and the lawyers told me I couldn't change it last minute. But so we ended up with a 90s high school horror comedy, and then I don't know what you call Empire Records, a 90s high school I don't know.
John, do you want to weigh in on this?
It's not a 90s high school movie. It's disqualified. We're only talking about 2 movies.
It's not even a high school movie. It's an ensemble.
It's a 90s high school workplace comedy. How about
for
that?
For sure. Yeah. Okay. And then we do have 1 traditional high school rom-com, or I guess if you will, or whatever.
Prom-com.
So, yep, a prom-con.
Yeah. Prom-com. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but we have a good selection, and I do want to say, because I was just barely looking at the tagline for She's All That, and it says a new comedy that proves there's more to attraction than meets the eye, and that might be the worst tagline of any movie we've ever done.
I have an award to change.
Thanks, Harvey Weinstein.
Adjusting this.
What a terrible tagline. Oh, man. We'll get to She's All That.
That's like, going to be a little while.
I'll save my comments until we get there. But She's All That has kind of been done multiple times. But anyway, we'll
they remade there. It with Audrey Hepburn, from what I understand.
Yeah. Just a year before she died of cancer.
And Mo Sizlak.
handsome Mo. Yeah. But anyway, the point is it's a good set of movies, and I had only seen Buffy once, and it had been a really long time. Empire Records was new to me, and She's All That is kind of a Fillmore family favorite. So it's a good set.
These are all I pretty much had seen all of them. I feel like I hadn't seen Buffy the Vampire Slayer since before the television show. So that was really weird. She's All That, I saw a couple times when it came out, which kind of doesn't seem that long ago. It seems weird. It seems like She's All That. It's like, oh, yeah, that's that movie that came out 5 years ago, and Buffy the Vampire Slayer was like 20 years ago. But, you know, not the case. It's just kind of weird how time dilates just because the 90s were so, it was kind of, I guess, a pivotal time for all of us. And I didn't want to forget this, and we're going to incorporate that into our awards a little bit, but we were all in high school in the middle of the 90s. So, yeah.
I think
we should be experts on this.
My kids think I'm like a child of the 80s, and I was a child in the 80s, but like my formative growing up years were probably 90s, right? And I think because those were our high school years.
Like, I was in high school in the 90s, but I never really got 90s high school movies. I think because I was a kid watching John Hughes movies in the 80s.
Yeah. Right.
And so I didn't really accept high school movies in the 90s,
It took me a while looking back to say, oh, no, high school movies was actually still a thing in the 90s. It's not just one or two here or there. But so with Buffy, because it had been so long since I'd seen it and because I had watched the whole show since then, at the end of the movie, I was waiting for her to burn down the gymnasium.
Yes.
It doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen because – well, I think we could talk about that just a little bit, but, you know, apparently, I mean, Joss Whedon's vision was robbed, justice for Whedon. Nah, just kidding. I don't care about him.
Stormed off the set halfway through the movie, so we don't get to see the gymnasium burn.
we can manage. I mean, and I don't sorry. I promised myself I wouldn't do the noise. Which we've gotten some complaints about the noise when I get
Who's
frustrated.
Like, we don't have enough listeners to have complainers.
I better not say who's complaining then. But
is it Katie?
No, I didn't say it.
Hi, Katie. We love you.
Katie, thank you for making our podcast better with your feedback. Now, John, quit making that noise.
No, definitely.
I love that noise, John.
Oh, good, good. Thanks.
Don't stop making it or I'll stop listening.
Good. Well, okay, in the meantime, I forgot what I was going to say. Something about Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
But it wasn't his creative vision.
Yeah.
Joss Whedon. Yeah.
It was – I guess that was pretty much it. I was growing up – I was one of the people – I'm kind of one of the people who – and it's my contrary nature, I suppose, that people always tell me I have, but I always disagree with them about it. Because I don't think I don't have a contrary nature, everybody. So stop making me argue with you about it. I always felt like I was a bigger fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer as the movie than the TV show, because there's kind of nothing more infuriating than someone who really, really loves the Buffy the Vampire TV show and talks about how great it is all the time. And
wow.
And I just like the idea of, okay, you know what? Can we just lighten this up and just do a complete comedy here? Because the TV show is great and everything, but I always had a hard time tonally with the TV show.
It's pretty serious.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of, and maybe because I saw the movie first, and then this TV show comes out that people praise, and I'm like, well, it's missing this thing, you know, and it might be this anchoring bias, Roy, that you always talk about, and so maybe like
we're
going
to be talking about it again, okay?
Yeah,
keep going.
Some of that plays into it, but I've always felt like I was kind of a defender of the the tone and style of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie, I think maybe because I wanted to disagree with, like, Buffy heads and everything. Especially because I got so sick of, you know, the Scooby Gang and Buffy the Vampire Slayer on the TV show, meeting in the library and just studying books. I'm like, I've seen enough scenes of that. You know, maybe that's the reason.
So the real point of this podcast is to study and discuss cognitive biases. So
okay, yeah. That's interesting.
Oh, excellent.
Well, now you tell me. 84 podcasts in. Had I known that, what have I just been an experiment on this podcast this whole time?
I don't. But so, by the way, I have a friend at work who has listened to a couple of ours, and he said, "Couldn't you guys do this in like a half an hour or an hour?" And I said, "Well, if we cared about like gaining more listeners, then maybe we would consider that. But I think all we really care about is just talking to each other." So
yes, yes,
yeah. And John, he can't tell you if that's what it is, because then that would ruin the experiment. You can't know that you're being experimented on. So you know.
Oh, okay.
So your mileage may vary.
Cool. Okay, well, I won't worry about it anymore then.
Definitely not. Okay. Definitely don't worry about it.
All right. Oh, I feel a sudden sense of suddenly my headache's gone. What does that affect?
So it's weird because it's possible I like the music from the 80s more, and I think I like the movies maybe from the 80s more, but as far as like style and hair and all that, I think I vastly prefer the 90s.
I don't think I prefer the 90s for anything.
Oh, okay.
I don't think. As I told you guys in our little group chat, I feel like the 90s were the longest 20 years of my life.
So, John, what was so difficult about the 90s? I mean, because I think high school sucks for everyone, but I mean, it was fine. And I had good friends to get through it. So, but what was the worst part about the 90s then?
I think... Okay. The 90s weren't bad. I mean, because I went to middle school and high school, I had a rough middle school. I had, I had this weird, it was a weird period of my life where my mom was remarried and, you know, we relocated and I was separated from some of my family, but not some other of my family. Then I had a new family to deal with. And it like all coincided at the same time as like when I started seventh grade, which is a rough time for anybody. And so I kind of feel like the 90s started off that way. But also the reason I hate the 90s is because the 90s told me I should be disaffected and dissatisfied with everything. And I think I took the message of the 90s to heart, and I kind of got really annoyed when everybody sort of grew out of the 90s and all this anti-corporate stuff and, you know, suck it to the man. And when I saw everybody who was telling me that become like corporate lackeys in the real world, I felt betrayed by what the 90s were trying to teach me. And so I like look back in distaste. I think that's my 90s story.
So it is interesting because we were good friends in elementary school. Then you moved away for junior high. And I will say I basically had to go to a whole new set of friends during junior high. But then you came back my freshman year of high school. And so I was allowed to abandon a lot of those friends again.
You still called me a mod, guys. Though. Everybody remember the, you know, the chronology of the show, like that we've talked about. And so you abandoned your friends.
I do at the drop of a hat.
That's true. I really appreciate that. I mean, it was kind of weird, you know, because going into high school and already having friends in high school, and then have their like my current friends having friends that I didn't know, like, was actually this really strange, like, social event that I never could figure out how to navigate. I'm like, am I now friends by association, or should I be nicer to these people, or are they supposed, you know, what's our social obligation with each other here? And it's like a weird thing. Yeah.
So I will say in middle school is where I met JB. So that was a friend well found. So that was good news. But I think I was heavily into the Cox twins, if you remember those two gentlemen, in junior high. And they're both still guys. Good fellows. Yep. Yes. Yeah. All right. Well, enough of that. Let's talk about some really great 90s movies.
You want to?
Let's do it.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer, that's a movie that, Andy, you picked it, right?
Yep.
Yes, okay. I did.
Why did you pick this one?
I picked it because Roy was going to not pick it. And because true. I wanted to get two movies that had Toad the Wet Sprocket on the soundtrack.
Ooh. Oh, okay. So you did that on purpose. I noticed that. I'm like, oh my gosh, Andy's going to love this Toad the Wet Sprocket thing.
Oh, so yeah.
I do say that if 10 Things I Hate About You had won, I probably would have picked Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Really?
Because then 10 Things I Hate About You and She's All That, I think, are similar enough that I wanted to have a more of a variety.
Okay. Because therefore you wouldn't have picked the one that was similar to that one. Was 10 Things pretty close? It wasn't, though, was it?
It was tied until you withdrew your vote.
No. Yeah. It was between... Oh, yes. No, you're right. It was that one.
Yeah. So essentially, John, you chose Empire Records.
Essentially, yeah. I think... Well, I'll get there when I discuss Empire Records.
Sure.
That's fine. Okay. Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Roy.
Buffy?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'd only seen this movie once, and I think I missed it when it came out in the theater. So maybe it was only like 10 years ago, but I still had kind of forgotten it. And I do want to say I was definitely I had a category that I was going to push for that I was going to do for Halloween this year that would have allowed us to watch Buffy. I really wanted to watch Buffy for Halloween. But anyway, it worked out very well here. And so we get to watch it here. So basically, the plot to Buffy the Vampire Slayer is you have Buffy Summers?
Summers, yes.
Yeah.
I don't think she has a last name in the movie.
I'm getting Summers from the TV show, aren't I?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's definitely in the TV show Summers, yeah.
She's a cheerleader, and I don't know why, but I've been on a real yellow kick lately. For like the last 15 years. Is that a kick? I don't know. But I am like her school's colors are yellow. And so we just start
with a yellow yoga pose.
Yeah. So she's a cheerleader. She's got her cheerleader friends. Hillary Swank is one of them. And they're just all like really vapid, right? Mm. They're kind of like the girls in
Mean Girls?
No, not in Mean Girls. In Clueless, except they're not really nice ditzy. They're kind of mean ditzy a little bit, especially the Swank, right? She's kind of a little meanish. I don't know.
Who's the real vampire here?
Yeah. So, but the point is like in this movie, they don't have like street smarts or other smarts. Buffy may be accepted, right? They're just portrayed as really, really dumb girls. Mm-hmm. But they love cheerleading and they love fashion and everything's going along fine, except some of their friends start going missing. There's a rash of murders in town, right? And one of the basketball stars has to go walk home, and he decides to walk home through the abandoned carnival. And I think Paul Rubens runs into him. Is that John Arquette, right?
Not John David Arquette.
David Arquette. Yeah.
I'm thinking John Larquette. I can't keep those two names straight because they're pretty much the same person.
Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, David Arquette, who's
I guess
brother,
I'll get him mixed up from now on. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Well, David Arquette's brother/sister is also in this movie.
Alexis. Patricia.
Alexis, that's right. Alexis. And so in this movie, did Alexis used to go by Alex?
Is it Alex?
In the credits,
Arquette?
It says Alexis.
We'll run into
Alexis Arquette again a couple of movies from now, and it's shocking. But,
okay.
Anyway, David Arquette turns into a vampire, among other people, and Buffy is we have some flashbacks to the past. We see her in the past, but we have Donald Sutherland who meets up with her in the locker room, and he sees her doing back handsprings, and when he sees that, he knows that she's the chosen one. She is the vampire slayer, which is fascinating because I think a lot of cheerleaders can probably do back handsprings. It seems like a really low bar.
He just walks around to high schools waiting for girls to do back handsprings.
Yeah.
does he tell every single one? Is he like, you're the slayer?
Yeah.
And then he like takes them to go slay vampires. And if they die, then it's like, oh, okay, I guess that's not her. And then he waits for another back handspring girl.
Yeah, I think so.
Kind of like a Salem witch trial sort of.
She's the 10th this week, right? Yeah. Anyway, to try and prove his point to her, I think he gets her hooked because he mentions the dream she's having, right? So he takes her to the graveyard, and she kills a couple vampires. Then, and I this is before he throws the knife at her head, right? Because I think she becomes disaffected from the idea of being a vampire slayer, but then he throws a knife at her head and she catches it. And it's kind of the line of the movie that I remember the most, right? You threw a knife at my head. And then she does training. There's a glorious training montage. There's so many jump kicks. There's a lot of high fives. She becomes a serious vampire slayer, but then she goes to meet the main vampire. She's not ready, mind you. And Rutger Hauer, who is the main vampire, he's there, and he has an opportunity to kill her, and he doesn't. He says she's not ready. I don't know what that means. Do you want to wait until your enemy is strong enough to defeat you? It seems like now would have been a really good time to kill her.
Okay. Okay. You don't know what that means. Does anybody... Okay. Should we talk about that now? Because it's like seriously a... crazy part of the movie that I'm like, am I missing something? Why is she just frozen? Why can't she just kill him? Isn't that her whole point? And if he has such control over her, what's the point of sending a slayer after him if she's the one person that guy can control?
Well, she quit. I think she quit her training early because her friends were in danger.
Oh, okay.
She pulled a Luke.
And she was told.
So Rutger Hauer is her father.
I think Rutger Hauer is her father.
But also, I mean, there's pretty heavy implication that, you know, that he's like doing vampire hypnosis mating ritual on her.
Oh boy, yeah. By the way, so one of the co-stars that plays alongside Rutger Hauer in this film is his mustache. He's got a really bad vampire mustache.
Oh my gosh.
It's something else.
The worst.
So does Rutger Hauer have a mustache? I thought only Donald Sutherland had a mustache.
No, Rutger Hauer's got a really bad mustache.
Oh, is it just thin and I couldn't see it?
Yeah, because it's really blonde, right? Mm. Did you watch this on your computer or on the TV?
TV.
Okay, well, maybe that's why, because you still use the tube TV, right? Until. But anyway,
point. I had a better TV. Thanks for you're shaming me for TV. Okay, fine.
Point is, Donald Sutherland sacrifices himself, and they kill him. And they
the
Obi-Wan. Yeah, but it doesn't make sense because it seems like Donald Sutherland could have lived and they were still going to let her go. Anyway, he's dead. She gets bummed out, so she spends the next week or whatever not training and just being upset with herself. That's what she does. But then after a week of wallowing in self-pity, she's ready because that'll get you ready. We do have a wonderful basketball moment.
It's Rocky-esque, I think. You know, she has to get her emotions in the right place.
Without the training.
She can let all the vampires beat her up for a long time, and then she can push them over.
Yeah. Okay. So, but there's a scene at a basketball game, which is so great, because we have a vampire who takes over the game. And does she attack him at that point? Is that when she kind of comes to her senses?
Krueller's abandoned the concept of zones when he becomes a vampire.
Also, we meet a really young Ben Affleck as uncredited basketball player number 10.
As pale basketball player.
Yeah. So anyway, now she knows that it's time to get serious. I've completely skipped the fact that Luke Perry is her love interest in this movie. Maybe that's the impact he has. I don't know. But the one thing he does do is he manages to drive a car that has Paul Rubens on top of it, and Paul Rubens hits a tree branch, which somehow severs his arm. That's what it does.
Yeah. Well, because his arm was reaching into the van. I guess that makes sense. Like the moon roof of the van, he hits a tree, so he stays with the tree. The van continues with his arm.
Okay. I'll accept it. So now it's prom time. Buffy goes to the prom. She's got a killer dress, but she's there to protect the place against vampires. We have a principal who's keeping things in line.
Steven Root.
Yeah, and he's doling out discipline left and right to the people who are being murdered by the vampires. The vampires break into the high school. I think Rutger Hauer just breaks right through the brick wall. There were probably doors, but that's not his style. He just comes right through the brick wall.
It's like the Kool-Aid Man.
Yeah, and then...
But he's not full of blood.
He's not full of blood. In the least suspenseful fight ever, Buffy kills him, like, pretty fast. It's not much of a duel, is it? There's not a heck of a fight. Well, just kills him.
But okay, but before that... Well, I guess after... Okay, he comes in, but before then, he, like... he attacks her, and then in Luke Perry, like, kills David Arquette, the vampire, by smashing him up against the electrical system.
There you go, which doesn't kill vampires.
And then the music goes out, and in the meantime, this is at the same time when Buffy is being, like, freezing and being seduced by Rutger Hauer, and then she hears the music go out, and is like, oh, Donald Sutherland told me the music would go out. And then that enables her to break free of his spell, which, okay, something is missing. There's like, this weird amount of vampire lore that's just kind of missing from the movie. Because
this movie is terrible. It doesn't set up any vampire rules. And they're, like, they can fly sometimes, or some of them can fly.
It's like the worst witch vampires.
What is this? It's terrible.
I feel like stuff is left out. I don't know. I can't explain it.
This movie only got 36% on Rotten Tomatoes, and it would cost $7 million to make it and made $16 million. So a cool $9 million profit, I guess. That's more than doubling what it cost. But so, I mean, we're almost there, right? So there's some really bad parts to this movie. Paul Reubens' goatee is really bad. So that part, what you're alluding to, is maybe the most glorious part of the whole film.
It is.
I will say, there's some serious actors in this film who do a pretty mediocre job. I feel like Rutger Hauer and Donald Sutherland both really phone it in.
I feel like that is a common thing among all three of these movies, with, like, amazing casts that the movies are not using them to their best abilities.
Yeah. Well, apparently I read that Donald Sutherland was really involved in rewriting his scenes, but also he was a massive pain and he possibly ruined the entire movie. because he was the big star. Donald Sutherland was the big star. And I think according to Joss Whedon, if we want to believe that guy, he's mad at the director of this movie because, and I can't remember her name, it's some...
Fran Kazooie.
I should have remembered her name because she's in the running for best name on the podcast. according to Joss Whedon anyway, like, she let, what's his name, Donald Sutherland steamroll her, like, on certain decisions, and all his decisions were terrible, and, you know, she didn't have enough clout, you know, to kind of deny those. And I don't know if that's true or not, but it kind of, if it's not true, that's fine. And I kind of don't believe it, but also I kind of get the sense that there was no, you know, whether it was Joss Whedon or Fran Kazooie or Donald Sutherland, there was, like, no one person who was passionate enough to, like, get some good things done, you know, like, they all kind of, like, bumped into each other, and there was nothing, like, super important made as a result, you know.
100%.
It's funny because I saw, and here's what I'm going to do moving forward. I think I'm not going to bother looking up the Rotten Tomato scores of these movies until I watch them, because I worry that it influences me. But when I saw the score for Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I was like, you got to be kidding me. I remember that being a pretty good movie, and then I watched it. And I was pretty let down.
Right. Yes. I think was everybody, like, this week. This week it was just kind of like I was looking forward to watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer the most.
Yeah, I think so too.
And it was kind of like, dang, like, it, movie.
Oh, it wasn't that good of a movie.
Yeah, I wanted it lush. More. Yeah.
Well, the last time I watched it was during season 7 of Buffy. Oh, and I remember being disappointed at it at that time as well. And that was, like, my last impression of it.
Well, you Buffy heads always hated the movie, so I just
Well, that is.
So there's some great 90s things going on, though. So this is early 90s, by the way, so I kind of expected some late 80s holdover stuff. But Buffy, at the end, she rocks that flannel pretty good. We've just got some actors that are going to show up again and again and again in every 90s movie. And I swear, like, Seth Green, is he just contractually obligated to be in every 90s movie in one role or another? He's just always there, right?
Who is Seth Green?
Well, he was in the TV show, but
Oh, he was. So was he not in this movie? Was he in Empire Records and She's All That?
He wasn't in Empire Records.
I guarantee
either.
You, he was in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. He was a vampire.
Was he one of the vampires?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I promise. I'm looking it up right now.
Yeah. No. Check it out. He probably was. I think I read that he was in it, but we mostly see the back of his head or something.
Yeah. Uncredited vampire, Seth Green.
Oh, okay. Wow. Well, there you go.
Wow. Oh my gosh, that really changes. That changes his whole arc in the TV show. He was a vampire. He turned into a werewolf.
Yeah. So what's interesting to me, though, is I think this movie was supposed to be like a vehicle for Christy Swanson, right? This was her first leading role, I think.
Yes.
And then she did Dude, Where's My Car? And then she disappeared from movies. And she did a lot of TV.
Wait, we're going to get there. Wait. Yeah? She was the female lead in The Phantom with Billy Zane in 1996. Don't forget it.
Oh, that's right.
So you've talked about The Phantom before. I need to see The Phantom. I'm gonna extracurriculate this.
I watched it this week.
Well, you have time
because of Christy Swanson and oh boy,
really? There was the movie. Billy Zane. I'll mention this now before I forget it. I'm on Letterboxd. I'm scrolling through Letterboxd reviews of all of these movies, and I think my favorite one was just some random person said, "Could you believe watching this movie that?" You know, the vapid, annoying friend is the one who won two Oscars, and then Christy Swanson didn't do anything after this. You know. Speaking, of course, of
Hillary Swank.
Yeah, Hillary Swank won two Oscars after this movie, and then Christy Swanson. I mean, she didn't disappear. I mean, I suppose if you want to work as an actor, you know, just consistently being in TV shows no one's ever seen is actually a pretty good gig.
She's consistently employed. And we're gonna find that throughout these movies that there's a common link to the TV show Psych. She's in a lot of episodes of Psych.
Oh my gosh, she is too. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
In fact, I'd have to cross reference, but I'd love to see if she's in any episodes where she's in it at the same time as Rachel A. Cook. You never know, because Rachel
Everyone
A. Cook was
from
in
the
for
80s and 90s was this.
Yeah. But Rachel A. Cook was in for a solid two or three seasons, so. Yeah. There could be crossover. Anyway, Christy Swanson is 23 years old when she plays a high school student here, which I guess isn't the worst. We talk again about Charisma Carpenter, right?
Right.
Who was like 42 when she was playing a high school student in the TV show.
Yeah.
Charisma Carpenter follows me on Twitter.
Does she?
Yes.
Good for you. So not 42, but she was 28 playing a high school student, which was just insane. In that first season of Buffy.
Yeah, that was. But the thing she says about Joss Whedon, yikes.
Are they in line with what everyone has been saying about Joss Whedon lately?
Yeah, and she was one of the first people to really break out and be like, look, this is what went down. I mean, essentially, she got sidelined / fired because she was pregnant. So they just like, oh, let's just write her off of Angel. And
she was written off of Angel?
Really angry about that. Yeah.
So I will say I did, I watched, Cabin in the Woods a couple nights ago with my daughter who says she likes scary movies. Mm-hmm. And that's a Joss Whedon one as well, right?
I'd rather like that one.
Yeah, that movie's so clever. My daughter thought it was horrible. She said it wasn't scary, it was just gory. And then we watched Paranormal Activity, and after that, when she said, I don't like scary movies anymore, and she slept with a light on in her bedroom that night. So maybe I've ruined her for horror films.
Joss Whedon? You can't do scary.
Yeah,
take that. Another Joss Whedon burn. Yeah.
Anyway, I love Cabin in the Woods. That's such a great film.
We haven't done that one, have we?
Yes, we certainly have.
Did we for Halloween? Oh, because it was on the Cabin in the Woods
Cabin in the Woods podcast, yeah. Okay. That was a great episode. We did Evil Dead 2, Cabin in the Woods, and Dead Snow.
Yeah.
What a wonderful trilogy of films. Yeah. Anyway.
Right. Listen
now. So that's kind of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I've got a lot of awards. But I don't have a ton left to say other than I was completely wrong. Chrissy Swanson was not Steph's girlfriend. She was just random girl at the prom that Ducky ends up leaving with.
In Pretty in Pink, yes.
In Pretty in
Pink. It was. We had a conversation about this on Facebook.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there were several vapid blonde girls in the movie Pretty in Pink. Yeah. And so, yeah, she wasn't the one that you think of. We need to talk about Pretty in Pink because I really want to discuss Steph's girlfriend, Pretty in Pink. She's one of my very favorite 80s characters.
I'll also say I think Pretty in Pink is one of the reasons why I think of Empire Records as being a high school movie, because I have conflated Ducky working in Janine's music store. Oh, he doesn't work. Oh,
he
sorry.
Doesn't. No.
Andy works in the music store.
An appropriately sized music store, whereas Empire Records is a 20,000 square foot music store.
It's a mansion music store. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's bigger than Tower Records, and there's Tower in that name. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, ridiculous. Man.
Okay, well, speaking of, should we talk about Empire Records?
We probably should.
Okay, let's talk about Empire Records just a little bit. Okay, first of all, not a high school movie.
So what are the criteria that we're trying to sneak it in? There were at least two students who were talking about being accepted to colleges, so technically still in high school.
Technically, Liv Tyler talks about calculus, studying calculus. And so that's going to be a high school class if you're not in college yet. So, there are a few other things. I think Renee Zellweger kind of implies that she's jealous of Liv Tyler's study habits because she could study too if she took that many drugs. Okay, we'll get there.
Yeah.
All sorts of things.
So she's a focusing addict.
Yeah.
The ongoing motif of this, though, is that Joe, Anthony LaPaglia's character, apparently collects weirdos who are underage, or 13, 14, and allows them to work in the music store and exploits them for child labor and then continues to let them hang out until they eventually leave or whatnot.
We can recut Empire Records as a horror film. We can call it The Child Collector. Don't change anything about Anthony LaPaglia because he looks more like a vampire than anybody in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Well, so does Rex Jane, Harrison. Rex Manning.
Rex Manning.
And Jane.
Debbie
Jane
Mazar. Also. Well, Debbie Mazar's she's a vampire, right?
Yeah, she's a vampire. Probably.
She's a real-life vampire.
Yeah, sure.
I love her, and I appreciate that she's a real-life vampire. She's really cool. Okay. So in Empire Records, first of all, one of the employees at this store, Empire Records, discovers that Empire Records might be sold to the man, to Music Town, where they can't have tattoos and they can't flash the customers anymore and they can't dance. Those are the big rules of Music Town and they don't want that. And they can't... They can't talk to customers about music, I think, was the big concern.
Yeah.
And so he discovers that. So he's like, okay, I'm going to take all the money, I guess, that they earned that day. And I was like, wondering, is $9,000 a lot? Is that what a music store would make in a day?
So in the mid-90s, when we were paying 18 bucks per CD, possibly.
Maybe, yeah. But okay, well, whatever. It's an amount of money. It's a very specific amount of money. It's also the worth of Empire Records. We'll have to talk about that a little
apparently,
bit.
Apparently, yeah.
So he takes all of that money, $9,000, and he bikes to Atlantic City, and he wins $18,000 and a very buxom call girl type person.
Yeah.
But then he loses $18,000 and the call girl type person. And so, and then he shows back up to work the next day. And then in the meantime, the day is Rex Manning Day. And so this terrible kind of Rod Stewart / Donny Osmond / Tom Jones type person is coming. And it's Rex Manning and he's signing autographs and he's a jerk. to everyone, and everyone knows he's a jerk. No one told Liv Tyler he's a jerk, and maybe maybe you shouldn't be into him, Liv Tyler. Like, we're all out on this guy, Liv Tyler. Maybe maybe don't think of him very much, Liv Tyler, but you know.
No.
And then a shoplifter comes, and they stop the shoplifter, and the guy who stole the money, he has superpowers, and he stops the shoplifter. And then they have a fake funeral for the mean girl. The meanest girl. Well, yeah. I don't like her. You know what? I'll just say it. I know she's got problems.
She's my favorite.
I know she's got problems, but it's like, okay, yeah, I have all these problems, and her solution to those problems are making pins that insult everybody in the store. I don't like her. There, I said it. Official stance of John Madsen. And they have a funeral for her, and I'm glad that they don't talk about her during her own funeral. They talk about other people, because the other two girls are having problems, and so they use her funeral to talk their problems through, which is totally fine with me, because you know what, Deb, just relax for a little bit. And then the guy who went shoplifting pulls a gun on everybody, and there's a gun scare, but he was using blanks, so then he gets hired. And then they have a big giant concert to save Empire Records, because they need a barrel full of $9,000 to give to the oh my gosh, he's so terrible. He wears a suit all the time. He's just such a man. But the guy who owns Empire Records is the worst, according to the movie. And also, he kind of says he's the worst. He doesn't even have to be the worst.
What's his name? Is it Mitch?
Mitchell.
Yeah.
There's two Mitchells in these movies then. Okay.
And very so good. I love it. So they fill a plastic container full of ones. It's probably like $200. That they just hand him. It's like, okay, we own Empire Records now. He's like, okay, fine. Because he doesn't count the money. I don't think there are $9,000 in that. It's just...
You know, we need to do a podcast where it's Save Our Thing movies.
Oh, yeah, that would be good. Yeah,
right, so we can do UHF.
Yeah.
Or Break Into Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah, Break Into Electric
Boogaloo. One Crazy Summer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ski Patrol.
Okay, you keep talking. I'm adding the category.
Yeah. I'll keep talking. Okay, so pretty much that's what happens in the movie. I just want to – let me sum up a few of the characters, because this isn't a movie where things necessarily happen. It's a one-location movie that takes place during a day, and we follow some characters, and you know, it's more about, like, these are the characters who work in the store than events that happen. Even though some major, huge events happen, that's not really what it is. So I'm just going to go over everybody. Anthony LaPaglia owns the place, and he's a father figure to everybody, and he collects children, and he...
And occasionally beats the crap out of them in his office.
He beats the crap out of them off camera, because it's too traumatic for us, and he drum rages out.
That was the most bizarre part of the whole movie to me, because everyone screwed up and whatever, and I guess they just had to make the point that the owner of the record store is really screwed up too, because he beats the crap out of the kid and tells him, you know, you deserve that, right? Which is like the super red flag statement that abusive people say, right?
Yep.
You know, you need to blame yourself for the fact that I just beat the crap out of you. So that was really jarring and bizarre.
It shows that they're all psychologically committed to the cult, which is Empire Records. It's too bad Music Town is not able to come in and save the day and free the children. Anyway, also Lucas is the guy who steals the money. He's Hecubus, and he says some witty 90s things directly to the camera. He can speak to me right through the camera, but unfortunately I can't punch him through the TV. And that's unfair. I consider that very unfair. AJ is the blandest human alive, but he's in love with Liv Tyler, understandably.
Yeah.
Liv Tyler plays Corey, and she's this, you know, hot high schooler, and she dresses like really cool and everything. But she's
sweaters
a dork.
And plaid skirts.
Yeah. Mm. She's secretly a dork. Well, she's not secretly a dork. She talks about how she's a dork and everything. And she's going to Harvard. Apparently she's this huge nerd. She's in love with Rex Manning, the only person under 40 in the world who's in love with Rex Manning. She throws herself at Rex Manning, and then she freaks out because Rex Manning is just – he's not – you know. I mean I'm kind of unsure about what happens in that scene, but Rex Manning's just kind of like, you know, whatever.
And he's not like, there for the passion.
He's not like in love with her or anything.
He continues his meal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Deborah is this girl with major problems, and she wants – the only thing she wants you to know is that she has problems. And she's like, I have problems, and then you say you want to talk about it, and she's like, F you. That's her deal. She shaves her head.
Yep.
Which is – it. The shaved head is fine, but also her hair was so pretty before she shaved
it.
Pretty.
Yeah. Yeah, so no, pretty. That is tragic. Apparently, as a result of this, she had to wear a wig in The Craft, which is another movie we could have watched.
Mm.
That would have been a good movie.
That would have been a good movie.
Yeah, it would have been interesting. Renee Zellweger is Gina the whore, but she's proud of it. Yeah. And she's proud of being a singer. She wants to be a singer. A whore.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do both. She can do both. She could be known for both. That's fine.
Pretty easily. There's a lot of overlap.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. And then Mark is the stoner who is – he's always trying to play music, but everybody vetoes his music because, you know, it's usually punk music. And he gets everybody dancing, but also – especially 90s punk music, it's like you can listen to it for 1.5 minutes maybe before you're like, I'm not listening to this anymore, Mark. And, you know, you turn it off. And he also licks patrons' feet.
And he's a little off.
Yeah. And Mark also has terrible opinions about bands like Primus.
Yeah.
He's right. Terrible.
Yeah. What did he say? He's like, Primus doesn't have the longevity. Is that what he said?
Yeah.
Then why am I still listening to those damn blue collar tweakers?
Huh. Yeah. Primus, writer of the theme song of one of the longest running TV shows of all time. So, yeah.
Which TV
show? No longevity there. South Park.
Oh, he did write South Park.
Well, I had no idea.
That's right. That's South Park, yeah. Okay. Burko is another guy, and he's, unlike Mark, he's in a successful band ish. Successful enough that everybody who comes to the big party, I think, is familiar enough with his band. Fun fact, the guy who plays
Sugar High.
The song Sugar High. He is Liv Tyler's actual stepfather at this time, which I didn't get too much information on that, but I assume Liv Tyler's mom, who apparently had sex with Steven Tyler at one point in her life, is now like married someone who must be 20 years younger than she is. How old is Coyote Shivers?
Yes, Coyote Shivers was born in 1965. So he would have been 30 at the time of this movie.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
I've got my spreadsheet open of exactly how old everyone in Empire Records was.
Thank you for that. You're very useful. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Okay, and then Warren Beatty, if that is his real name, is the shoplifter.
His name's not Warren. No.
The shoplifter for attention. He says his name's not Warren, so it's probably Earl Bailey. Beatty. Earl Beatty? His last name's Earl. Beatty. No, we don't know his name.
Ned Beatty. No, he's Ned Beatty.
He's Ned Beatty. That's his name. Ned Beatty. Thank you. That's his real name. Ned Beatty. Okay, I was trying to think of another Beatty. Okay, he's the shoplifter who just wants to work at a record store. Which is fine. It's kind of funny. Like, Empire Records, they kind of say, it's like, you know, we're all the misfits. We're all the, you know, weirdos. And this is the only place we could work. And it's one of those – I never really thought that, like, working at a record store was like this. I mean, I guess a lot of misfits are there. But I always kind of got annoyed when the misfits are like, this is the only place I could work, you know, and – you know, don't judge me for that. And I'm like, I want to work at a who doesn't want to work at a record store? Like, why would that ever be like something like, oh, it would be so boring to work at a record store? And it probably literally is. But of course you want to work at a record store because that's what teenagers do. They listen to records. We listen to music. And that's – so I don't know. That's just a thing that, like, you don't have to tell me that you like working at a record store. Like, that's kind of – I feel like that's built into it.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the last guy is Eddie, and he has long hair. Yeah, the pizza guy.
Yeah.
He has long hair, and he's the only person who talks about music.
Oh, that's interesting. So I just want to tell you that I have no idea how much it cost to make Empire Records, but it made $273,000.
You know what? I mean, you could probably make Empire Records for about that much.
For about that much. And so, and this movie is our lowest score on Rotten Tomatoes at 29%. So this movie feels fairly disjointed, and it feels like it doesn't always know where it's going or what it's doing. But I guess what like kept throwing me off all the time were all the scenes in the break room where I every one of those scenes would – it felt like it started out with the characters looking at each other like – line or what are we doing, like what now, what there was always just like a pause for them,
right.
And so I don't know, this was a fascinating movie, Andy, and I'm glad I watched it.
You're welcome. It's more of a soundtrack than a movie. It's a tone poem with 80s and 90s music.
Yeah, well, I think, and I've mentioned this before and I've tried to explain this, I think you, in like everyone I know who's enjoyed Empire Records, like enjoyed it when they were very young, when they were still filling their lives with music and music scenes and attitudes and stuff. And I don't know, I would love to hear from someone who, like at 35 years old, watched Empire Records and found some meaning, some enlightenment to it. I'm sure there is, you know.
So I watched it for the first time at the age of 45, right?
Yes.
And here's what I will say for this movie, and okay. I think this movie, because – and it's not like the 90s had a monopoly on screwed up kids, right?
Yeah.
I don't think that's the case. But anyway, there's always screwed up kids, and the truth is almost every kid is a screwed up kid. And I think that's kind of the point of this film is, hey, screwed up kid watching this movie, you're fine. You're just fine because we're all screwed up. Everyone's got problems, and you're not the only person who's unhappy and has to struggle with stuff. You're not alone. And I don't know if that's an intentional message, but every single character in this movie is really messed up. But they're all okay, right? Because they help each other and they're together and they're in it until music land buys them out, and then no more dancing.
Yeah. That's the whole point, is it's like, oh yeah, a bunch of misfits get together. This is their found family. They show up for each other, they have a community. Even though they fight, they still love each other.
Yeah,
because that's what families do. And we take care of each other.
Yeah. I find that relatable, though. I really do, because we have the girl who attempted suicide, right? And so I'm sure that there's a lot more people than raise their hands that had suicide attempts or at least ideation, right? So. Mm-hmm. So I'm not getting dramatic, but myself included, like I had some ideation as a teenager. And so like a lot more of us are screwed up than we let on. Right.
Sure.
And so it's comforting it's not comforting to see screwed up people on screen, but it's comforting to know that you're not alone, that there's other people, and you know what, we can still take care of each other. So
I feel like I shouldn't have said I hated the girl who tried to kill herself. Is that what you're saying?
No, not at all. I have plenty of problems with her because I kind of agree with you a little bit that like her whole vibe is I'm really screwed up, but by the way, if you try to talk to me about it, then screw you, right? But
mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I also think that like those people who really are screwed up, that it's weird. It's like they push people away and they don't let people in because they're just preempting rejection.
Exactly. Right? And that's why I have that like affinity towards Deb, is that it's actually my favorite scene in the entire movie. I joked when we were watching this together and said my favorite scene is the shoplifting scene, but my actual favorite scene, the scene that I think is actually the like emotional core of this movie, is when she's sitting in the listening booth and she's doing Joe's taxes and he shows up and he's like, hey, if you ever want to talk, and she's like, what, you're gonna fix me, Joe? Because, you know, go right ahead, I'll listen. And he's like, that's not what I meant, but should I like call your mom or something? Oh yeah, that's great, if you have her number, please give it to me, because I'd really like to talk to her. And she is so simultaneously an asshole and really hurting at the same time. Yeah. And that rang so true to me. And that's just, I'm like, oh yeah. Sometimes people, when they're hurt, they're they are hurting you and they're saying hurtful things, but it's not about you. It's because they're hurting and you have to like meet them on their own terms.
Yeah.
And I just love that.
Okay. You know what? That's really good because I felt really annoyed with her, you know, in that moment, but that was kind of the real, that was the real moment
it's
of the
real.
Movie. That was the real moment of the movie. Like, you know, there are other moments like when AJ talks about how, oh, I'm in love with her, but you know, and then she, and then the moment where she says, oh, but we're best friends. Those aren't real moments. You know?
AJ is the dry toast of this movie.
Oh, he's the worst.
There's so little substance to AJ, right? But so it's just with Deb Bright, it's just you put out there that you're screwed up and that whatever, and then you hope to attract other people who are just as screwed up because then you know that you won't judge each other, right? It's all about finding people who won't judge you. So you kind of put that out there. But then at the same time, you're putting out the same vibe that if you're not willing to share that, like being screwed up with me, then also I don't want to have anything to do with you. And so anyway, we'll get to rankings, but I think Deb is probably really is the emotional core of this film. And I rank
Deb eighth.
Eighth. Okay. Mm-hmm. So as I'm getting into that part of the movie, right, these are some screwed up people who are helping each other out. Then we get to the part where the store owner beats the crap out of Lucas. And I'm like, okay, now.
No.
So not everyone has my sympathy anymore.
The thing is, I don't think Joe shouldn't have beat up Lucas. I mean, just as a thing, you don't beat up people. I mean, if there's someone I wanted beat up, it would definitely be Lucas. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm with him there. But also, I felt kind of bad for Anthony LaPaglia through the whole movie. Because he just has to be just grumpy enough because he doesn't just turn Lucas into the police. You know, it's like, I like you, so I'm not going to turn you in, but I'm just going to have to just be gruff for the rest of the movie because you took the money.
It's just a weird choice by the writers. It really is, because I think they could have done a number of things to show like, okay, he's been holding in how upset and how frustrated he is, and it comes to a boiling point. And maybe like Lucas has a favorite guitar that's his deal and Joe smashes it or something, right? I just think they could have made 100 different choices than I've reached my breaking point. I can't hold it in any longer. I'm taking you to my office where I'm going to rough you up even though I'm twice your age and twice your size.
Now, but the thing is, it was a Transmorphers moment, right? Because
so for all we know, they're just sitting in there playing checkers and they occasionally like, throw something at the window.
It's possible that what happened is he took him in to yell at him and Joe tripped and fell against the window or something. And then that's why the shades bounce up or something.
In fairness, we never saw what happened inside, right?
yeah. So. But which actually is kind of a weird choice. Like if you're not even going to show what's inside, why have it as an event? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I guess it's just so they could get away with it. Maybe it's just so they could get away with it. I don't know. Okay, but I have many feelings about Empire Records. And I realized watching it that I didn't think I'd seen it, but I kind of think I may have seen the whole thing when I was like 22 years old, which I still feel is too old to really enjoy Empire Records, because it is so based on, it's so 90s and it's so based on, not growing up and corporations are coming and the man and, you know, artistic integrity and just like all is just kind of these weird nebulous concepts, like artistic integrity and corporations just as a, like one is good and one is bad, but the content of both of them, like, aren't acknowledged, you know? But I kind of have this thing. It's like, okay, all of these people in Empire Records, they've all found each other, and they all, like, play the music, and they all dance, and it's about inclusion. But I psychologically, and this is my problem because I do this with so many things, when I see people get together and feel included, what the movie is trying to do is say, see, you can be included too. But I always feel the opposite. I see people being included with each other on the screen, and I'm like, I'm not included with them. And here's the important thing. they're telling me that it's important to be in this clique, to be in this Empire Records thing, and that they're really cool, and I should want to be in their clique. I don't want to be with them in Empire Records. I don't want to be like in this group so much. And so I have this really weird, frightening, strange breakdown every time I watch Empire Records.
So you've watched it a lot.
I've watched it twice, but I've kind of felt the same. Well, no, I've watched it three times. Right. Okay. Cause I watched it before we did the watch party. So I watched it way back when, and then I watched it twice this past week. But okay. But my other thing just really quick is I feel like they identify their inclusion a lot more about what they stand against than what they stand for. What I really needed with Empire Records is them talking a lot about the music they love and why they love it and why they like sharing it with these people. But what I got was Rex Manning sucks. We don't like him. So it's about the inclusion is actually about exclusion from the way I see it, you know?
Yeah, so there really isn't much of a push for it to be about music at all, right? Other than they play some songs and they do some dancing.
Yeah.
Right. So that's an interesting take. John, I will say, John, I'm glad that you included me in your group, sir.
Yes. Yeah. I'm glad I excluded everybody else.
Like those Cox twins.
Yeah. And come high school, they were just right out.
Yeah.
We had a good we fit in a weird spot, right? Like no one really made fun of us or teased us, and we weren't hyper popular either. But I feel like I don't know how you two felt, but I felt like I had acquaintances in many different areas. But we had a good little group.
That's the thing about high school movies that is kind of frustrating. I think that's like when I was watching high school movies in the 80s, I was like, oh wow, like who's popular and who's not popular? That like takes so much of my time. But the thing, like when you actually get to high school, it's kind of funny because you spend class with all these different people, and some of them are popular, some of them aren't popular. Yeah. But like your high school existence isn't based on like lunchtime and the quad and everything. That's just like 1 hour out of the day. The people you associate with all the time is from all different respects. And so everybody had people they were friendly with across the board. And I wish more high school movies kind of did that a little bit more, kind of separated themselves out from the cliques. And like they showed the like dramas like, okay, I'm friends with this guy and this guy doesn't hate this person, but he does hate this person, but I'm friends with that, you know, just how everybody's connected and not separated. Yeah. I wish high school movies did that.
I also wish that high school movies did a better job of portraying the truth. So like, cause a lot of these high school movies show like, that the sports hero is kind of the most popular person in school. But I think the vast majority of high school students think that the sports hero is kind of a joke. That's always what I felt in our high school. Cause I think it was, the principal's son who was on the football team that was kind of propped up as like the guy, but I think everyone thought he was a joke. Spencer Campbell.
Right. If you want to name him, let's go ahead and do that.
Well, he's definitely listening to this podcast, isn't he? Spencer, I didn't get to know you very well. I'm sure you're a great person. In high school, I thought you were a joke. Sorry.
Yeah, well, I think, actually, you know, I'm not going to tell. I don't want to get into like some specific story. So I'll just go on. The thing is, I mean, and that's the other thing. The most popular person at high school, like the person is like, okay, who would you say the most popular person at high school is? And you did a poll and you found out who that person was. That would also be kind of the most disliked person in high school because that's the perception. It's like the most popular high school person in high school isn't necessarily the person you like. It's just who you perceive everyone else likes and you resent. it drives me so crazy. You know, we're going to talk about She's All That and everything, Freddie Prinze Jr. And he's a nice guy and She's All That and everything. But the fact, you know, he says hi to someone, he calls her the wrong name and she's like, oh, he talked to me. That's not how it is. She doesn't like him. We don't like that guy. Like everybody else was just with their friends doing their thing. And they talk about the popular people, but they don't talk about how much they like the popular people. No one does that.
Well, so it's fascinating because you have the Freddie Prinze Jr. character who I think it shows that he's like making an effort to be friendly to everyone. But then you have the Taylor Vaughns, right? Who Like, I don't understand the appeal there to anyone.
Yeah.
She's the worst.
Taylor Vaughn.
But she has the best running for prom queen poster I've ever seen in my life.
It's so good. It's so good. Okay. I want to talk about She's All That now. But we're still talking about Empire Records, unless we're not talking about Empire Records.
So, well, okay. Well, I want to – we'll talk about She's All That in a sec. But I do – I agree with you, John, that like – because as someone for whom Empire Records was like very important to me in 1995, what you said totally tracks. And I pretty much agree with you. And I didn't see the movie in the theater. I knew about the movie because of the soundtrack. The year was 1995, and a young Andy Wilson was a part of an internet use group of Toad the Wet Sprocket fans.
Oh.
No, seriously, this is true.
Wow.
And they announced they were going to have a new song on this movie soundtrack.
That's a great song coming
out on this date in July. And so I took the bus across town and I went to the music store and I said, I want to pre-order this CD. And they're like, what? What are you talking
about? What's pre-order
mean? I'm like, no. I like, are you going to have copies of this CD when it comes out? And they're like, yeah, probably. And I'm like, because it might be kind of obscure. I don't know. And he's like, no, we'll make sure we have one for you. So, and I went and I got it on opening day and I was very happy. The movie came and went. Like, I don't even know if it played in Provo. I never saw it. But then it showed up at Blockbuster.
Yeah.
And heck yeah, I rented that.
Empire Records is pretty much straight to video. Pretty much.
Pretty
well, much. Well, if it only made $270,000 bucks.
Well, because the studio literally, like, they were like, this is a mess. We're just going to dump it at the end of August. They didn't care about anybody going to see it. It had a very limited release. It went to video and then it found this like second life.
Yeah.
And I watched it and I made sure my parents never saw what was in the movie because they would have freaked out about some of the content. But I didn't think anyone else liked that movie. And then I ended up in my freshman dorm at BYU and one of the other people on my floor had a copy on VHS. And so we just watched that constantly and we'd just start quoting it. And I thought we were the only ones who knew about this movie and it was like our little club. And then, you know, 10 years later, according to the internet, many people my age liked this movie and I'm like, that is weird. But yeah. So.
Yeah. No, it's huge. I always thought. Because I didn't remember when it came out. Because, you know, first of all, 1995, I was around. I never heard of it. And I think most people never heard of it, like, when it came out. And I guess it kind of built up because it was 1998, 1999 when I heard people talking about just how much they adored Empire Records. And so it was like a slow introduction. I feel like more people saw Empire Records in the year 2000. Like, probably 30 times more people saw it in the year 2000 than 1995. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause it totally built up to that.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And the availability on DVD and VHS definitely helped this movie. And the fact that like half the people in this movie went on to make other very much more successful films.
See, it's crazy, I think, that because Liv Tyler was this. Okay, sorry. Chronology wise, where was she in Aerosmith videos at this time?
She had been in the Aerosmith video.
Yeah. Which was huge. That was like the Aerosmith video was like the biggest movie that year, I swear. And so I'm kind of amazed that they didn't take advantage of like Liv Tyler's Aerosmith fame, you know, to promote this. Did you guys read this? I thought it was really funny. Like the executive who signed Empire Records, like he's like, okay, I'm gonna produce this. I'm gonna get the money for Empire Records when it becomes this huge hit, and he knew it was going to become a huge hit. He like signed Empire Records, and then they're like, hey, do you want to also do this movie and produce this movie and get the money for this movie? And he's like, no, I'm good. I'm not going to take my chances anymore because Empire Records is going to be a huge hit and I'm going to be a millionaire or a billionaire or whatever. And the movie he turned down was Clueless. Which is really funny because Clueless, you know, big, huge hit, and we've already talked about that, and Empire Records didn't even break a million. Funny story, Empire Records. Just a quick studio note, if anybody's listening who has a time machine, who wants to go back in time and make Empire Records, if your whole point is like anti-corporate and anti-the man and, you know, anti-imperialism, maybe don't call your record store Empire Records.
Yeah. Probably a bad idea.
Empire Records, I'm glad. I know I have weird issues with it. That's a me problem, but I'm glad we watched it instead of 10 Things I Hate About You, because we'll watch 10 Things I Hate About You at a later time, and I don't know if I was in the mood to watch 10 Things I Hate About You anyway.
Fine. And I mean, as much as I love this movie, it is not a functional film. It's like the script does not work. It doesn't make a lick of sense. It has all of the problems of Buffy minus vampires, but I inexplicably love it. I don't know what's wrong with me.
I'll just say it right now. These three movies have the three worst scripts of any movies we've ever talked about.
Ever.
They're just
John,
problems.
I've
they're
been
just,
on the episode yeah. where we talked about Manos, so I don't think that's true. But
You're right. I don't know. I guess we're just watching them all. Manos, Manos is Manos.
These are very bad scripts.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's talk about She's All That, though.
Okay, She's All That has a very bad script based on a very bad play, Pygmalion. No, I'm just kidding.
I don't know.
No,
maybe.
But it is. It is. This is the Pygmalion story. Freddie Prinze Jr. is Zach Seiler. He's the golden god of their high school. He's a star athlete. He's on his way to being crowned prom king. He gets back from spring break. His girlfriend Taylor dumps him to be with Brock Hudson, played by Matthew Lillard, who is a real world star. Yeah. Who got kicked out of the house for being an awful human being, people smell his farts.
Some of the worst writing when he says, all right, Taylor, tell me what happened.
Well, it does get an award later. Is Brock Hudson, is it Puck? Is that who it is?
I think he's Puck.
I think it's Puck, but there's a little bit of Sean Duffy in there, I think.
Which one was Sean Duffy?
He was in Boston, and he grew up to be a terrible member of Congress from Wisconsin.
Uh-oh. Oh my!
So,
but yeah. Matthew Lillard acts the crap out of this movie.
He does.
He does, doesn't he?
Well, okay. Can we just take our hats off to Matthew Lillard? I just got to say, huge fan. I'm a huge fan.
I generally like Matthew Lillard. Yeah. Yes, and there are so many of these movies with him and Freddie Prinze Jr. Have either of you ever seen Wing Commander?
No.
Because no.
You need to watch Wing Commander.
I'll watch it.
Wing Commander.
It is terrible.
Well, if it's got Matthew Lillard and Freddie Prinze Jr. in it, then I'm good.
Yes. It makes this look like Shakespeare. But they both came out in 1999. I remember coming back from my mission and in fall of 1999 and going through Blockbuster and watching three or four movies a night, which is part of the reason why I get all of these movies confused, because I think I watched all of them in the space of a week. I was like, who are Freddie Prinze Jr. and Matthew Lillard? And who are Matt Damon and Ben Affleck? And why are these two pair of people everywhere suddenly? They're like the store brand Damon and Affleck.
That's great. So this story is like your Cool by Association, which has been done a bunch of times, right? Like
Right.
Can't Buy Me Love.
Yes.
Right. And what are some other good examples of cool by association? Maybe when I say a bunch of times, I mean twice.
My Fair Lady. I mean.
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah. All of the Pygmalion.
I guess the twist on this one is that she doesn't know, right? That she's not part. Oh, I would also say like
10 Things I Hate About You.
10 Things I Hate About You, and also sort of To All the Boys I've Loved Before, sort of.
Right? Oh, yeah. A little bit. Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. So the twist here being she doesn't know, which means you know throughout the entire movie that you're being set up for the moment where she finds out, and it's just an impending disaster. But anyway,
Andy. So Paul Walker, who is his best friend, Dean Sampson, makes a bet with him and says, Freddie Prinze Jr. says, I could make any girl the prom queen. Doesn't matter that my girlfriend broke up with me. And he's like, okay, then I pick that girl, Lainey Boggs.
The second hottest girl in school.
I know.
Right. Like maybe third.
A poor choice. Think of all the bad girls he could have chosen. And you can tell, even if she's like quirky art girl cute, she's still cute, right?
She's so cute. Yeah. She's so cute. Well,
okay, Andy, I read your Letterboxd review, and I agree. She was cuter before the transformation.
Oh. Cuter in the stupid falafel hat.
Yeah. Like, oh my gosh.
She pulls that off. Speaking of which, there's a long sequence where Freddie Prinze Jr. gets rejected by her over and over again, including where he is stalking her at her place of work.
Yeah.
Where she sells falafel. He finally wears her down enough and says, okay, you can come with me to this art show that I'm doing. Guess what? It's not regular art. It's performance art. And
with Alexis Arquette.
With Alexis Arquette, and it is bananas. And it's so bananas, they pressure him to come up on stage, and he does an impromptu tone poem about the pressure of his hacky sack.
Which was amazing. Just kidding, it wasn't. I hated it.
No, it was really bad. It was really bad.
Yeah. Then he's like, you know what? I want you to go to the beach with me. And she's like, no way. And he's like, okay, then I'm going to hang out with your younger brother, Kieran Culkin, and we're going to play Sega all day. And she's like, fine, I hate you, but we'll go. So they go to the beach. Then guess what? All the popular people show up at the beach too. They end up playing sand volleyball, and inexplicably put the two shortest girls up the front of the net, which doesn't make any sense.
So does Misty play, or does she spend the whole time tanning under the umbrella?
Good question. I don't know. I didn't watch it that close. You've watched this movie like 10 times.
Who? I kind of really like Misty. I know she's supposed to be like Taylor's best friend, and she never really wavers from Taylor, but I kind of like Misty.
No, not Misty. Isn't Misty the art kid?
No, Misty's the shorter girl of like Taylor's two best friends. There's the tall black girl and then the shorter girl with the short hair.
What's the name of the art girl?
Misty's the art girl.
Yeah. Okay.
That can't be the case.
Yeah. We gotta look it up. Sorry.
Okay. I'm looking at this. Are you thinking of,
Lil'
Kim's character or?
Oh no, you're right about Misty. Oh, I've been wrong the whole time. So is it Chandler? Is Chandler that girl's name?
Is her name Chandler? I was going to say, because everybody in all of these movies speak like Chandler Bing.
Okay, no, you're absolutely right. Misty is definitely Clown Face Girl. So I've been wrong this whole time, and Chandler is the girl that is Taylor Vaughn's best friend that tans under an umbrella.
Okay.
Yeah.
Man.
So there you go.
Roy, do women ever get sick of you mixing them up with other women?
I've never messed up my wife's name, so we're doing pretty good work.
All right.
I think as long as you don't mess that one up, then you're okay.
Yeah.
So that's okay. He gets his sister, Anna Paquin, to give Lainey a makeover, and she takes off her glasses and gets a haircut, and suddenly she's beautiful. Not really. She was always really cute. But that dress, though.
It's so funny how they...
That dress is so gorgeous.
They put so much stock in that transformation. But
yeah.
The dress is... I hate it. Well, the dress was awesome and it was hot, but I really hated the whole, hey, come with me to this thing. Here's this washcloth. You're wearing this, you know?
Yeah.
That's
not great.
But, yeah.
But it is – I mean, this is from another movie, but that's not a dress. That's an Audrey Hepburn movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wowza, that's a dress.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks great. Does this – okay. Does this ever work in real life?
Ever happen in real life?
Wear this. This guy just bringing something for a woman to wear. Wear this.
Yeah. I don't know what they thought would happen at this party where all of a sudden she's mixing with the coolest kids in the school who none of them have any idea who she is. Why does even Taylor Vaughn recognize...
thing about the party.
Taylor Vaughn can't possibly know that there's a connection between Zach and Lainey. Does she simply recognize, you're not popular enough to be at this party, I'm going to go take care of business?
I just love – okay, sorry, pardon me, Roy, because I know you hate it when I swear. But I just love how just extremely proactively bitchy Taylor Vaughn is. Because, like, why did she even have to walk across the whole party to choose someone out in front of everybody? Like, what good does that do? Like, what does she gain from that?
Yeah.
And so I kind of respect that she's that committed to being that person. Yeah. But it's very silly.
She's awful. But Dulé Hill is running the party, and he seems pretty nice, all things told. Even though, like, he's kind of a party to this bet. Anyway, Lainey gets nominated to be prom queen, and she's then competing with Taylor. Luckily, all of the nerds and various clubs on campus rally behind her, and the race is on. Let's see. Freddie Prinze Jr. has gotten into, like, 12 Ivy League colleges, and his dad's like, you gotta go to Dartmouth, son, or you gotta pick a school. And he's like, oh, my life is so hard that I have to pick all these amazing colleges. I don't know. Oh, I hate it.
It's so funny to me because in the pivotal scene where they're pouring out their souls about their problems, she's like, my mom died, I had to raise my brother, and it's been really rough, and I don't know how to fill the void that my mom left. And he's like, I've been admitted to every school in America. But I can get it, like, right? Maybe his dad is putting his expectations on him, but then you get to that scene where he has it out with his dad.
Yes.
And his dad's like, seriously? Just pick a school. I don't care where you go.
I love that scene so much. I thought it was so funny. It's like, I'm not you, Dad. Don't you want to – like, Freddie Prinze Jr. thought he was, like, Keith in Some Kind of Wonderful. Like, this is not about you. I had the money at every right, you know, and I'm not going to go to college and all this. And then his dad is like, oh, I understand, son. And he just walks out of the room.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, okay, cool. It's just, yeah. And you do, you know, do whatever. Yeah.
That was just so funny to me.
Go to UCLA if you want to. Fine.
Yeah.
Just do something cool.
Adults pick random papers out of stacks. That's what adults do.
Yeah. That's great. They continue to bond. They almost kiss when she's talking about her dead mom. Dean, Paul Walker, shows up and is like, hey, it's so terrible that Zach's only dating you because we made this bet that he could turn you into the prom queen. And she's like, what? I hate you now, Freddie Prinze Jr. And instead goes to the prom with Paul Walker? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's
but that's what happens.
Yeah, I want to point out that this, like, just Dean's casual mentioning of the bet in front of this girl who the bet's involved, it really reminded me of when Roy did the same thing to me when we had a bet involving who would kiss the girl first in college. And the secret was out, and Roy constantly mentioned the bet in front of the girl I liked.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sorry, Megan.
That was some serious Paul Walker and She's All That energy that you evoked back in 1995. Yeah.
My apologies, John. I will say that the scene where she finds out that it's been a bet, right? Like, can you imagine, though? Like, she thinks that these people have become her friends, and she's gotten to know them, and she enjoys their company. They're having a good time, and then to just, like, have it all come crashing down, right? And I don't want to, like, make this scene more melodramatic than it is. I think Lainey does the job just fine by herself, but it would just be It would be devastating, don't you think?
It would, but the thing is, the bet wasn't a conquest bet. Like, I'm going to get this girl to like me, or I'm going to sleep with this girl, or anything. I think they complicated the bet so much. And one thing I really, really don't understand is why Freddie Prinze Jr. couldn't just say, "Hey, you know what? I can make you into a prom queen. I need you to help me out. And I'll do whatever you want in the next few months." But it's just like, why couldn't he tell her? Like, she went around high school and she's like, "Hey, why are all these campaign posters with my face on them?" You know?
Yeah. So you're thinking more like in the movie To All the Boys I've Loved Before, where it's an understanding.
Right.
Right, where they both know what's going on. So I think, number one, she never would have agreed to that.
She probably wouldn't have, which, I mean, I think – and maybe that would have been better if – that would have made a lot more sense in the bet if that was part of it, convincing someone who doesn't want to be prom queen to be prom queen.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that would explain the whole, like, why he doesn't want Lainey instead of some, you know, some girl with, like, a back fungus or whatever. You know, the list of terrible things that they mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, when they're judging all the women in the high school. Yep. Yeah.
they're Facebooking them.
Yeah.
I kind of felt like it was an understood but not spoken part of the bet that that it couldn't be mentioned, which is why I feel like when Paul Walker brings it up that, like, the bet should be over.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Kind of like the Twinkie bet should have been over.
Yeah. Not fair. Yeah. Just not fair. In the meantime, Matthew Lillard has been a total jerk because he'd rather watch reruns of himself on TV than make out with Taylor.
Which, that's one of the best scenes in the whole movie.
I don't understand. I do not get that. But that's just the way that Brock Hudson rolls, you know?
Yeah, stay anyway, out of my closet. That might be one of the best quotes in the film.
So she tries to get back with Freddie Prinze Jr. He's not really having it. He's kind of heartbroken. But they all go to the prom anyway. And out of nowhere, the DJ, Usher, says, "Hey, everybody, do that dance we've been practicing." And there's an amazing choreographed dance sequence to the Rockefeller Skank for like 12 minutes? How long? I don't know.
It's a full 20 minute.
Yeah, 20 minutes.
It was my favorite scene of the movie. I'll just say that really quick right now. But surprising, they put it in apparently because they were just padding out the movie because they didn't have a lot to talk about in the movie. One thing I read – well, actually, no. I heard this somewhere from someone. This might not be true, but apparently there's a big subplot taken out where Gabrielle Union's character becomes friends with Lainey specifically because she's like, "Oh, Taylor Vaughn is a rotten person to me, and Lainey is nice." And so there was like a side plot of them becoming friends because of that. You know, she just saw like, "Oh, this is a nice person. I'm going to be friends with her," which I think is kind of basic, but it would have been really cool, right? Yeah. Like, it would have been really. I think it would have you know, bolstered up the movie a lot and talked a little bit more about cliques rather than bets, you know?
That's her friend Katie, right?
It's the woman Dulé Hill went to the prom with, the black girl, not Lil' Kim.
Yeah, it's Katie, I think, is the character's name. So it's fascinating Katie. To me that Lil' Kim is in this movie and she gets one line.
Yeah.
Right, is this before she had an album?
I don't know.
No. Wait, I don't know when she had an album. But she was on the All About the Benjamins. Wait, no. When would that? I don't know. I wasn't in the country during this time. But this movie came out in January of 99. And All About the Benjamins came out, I don't know, also early in 99?
I apologize, Andy, because I was in the country, but I was not keeping up on my Lil' Kim news.
Yeah,
or your Puff Daddy news.
Yeah,
I wasn't either, but okay. Yeah, I don't know. So, yes. Anyway, they go to the prom. Well, I don't know. So Dean is like, "Yeah, I'm totally gonna take Lainey to a hotel room, and we're gonna have sex." And then he's like, "No way, you're not." And Freddie Prinze Jr. is like, "No way, you're not." And he calls all the hotels and can't figure out where they are. So he goes to her house and she comes home, and I don't know, I would have liked to have seen that scene actually where she tells Paul Walker off. That would have been great.
Yeah. Well, the fact that she had to use the foghorn means that he got aggressive, right?
Right.
I mean, if she said no, and he's like, okay, you said no, I'll drive you home, then she's probably not using the foghorn.
We didn't see the scene because it was a joke. To see the scene, it would have been too dark to make the joke that she used a foghorn on a guy, you know? I think that's why we couldn't. And I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm not, like, because it's weird. It's just like, oh, yeah.
Here's the guy who tried to sexually assault me.
Yeah, here's the guy who assaulted me.
Now we're graduating together.
Yeah, and it's kind of weird. I kind of think they should have done something a little different with Paul Walker, because he was just I can't believe he maintained some sort of credibility with all the douchey things he does throughout the movie. Like, he has to do douchey things all the time. And it's like, you know, he would have gotten away, his dastardly plot would have been just fine if he didn't have the tragic flaw of just being like, oh yeah, I'm gonna assault a girl in a hotel room. Yeah.
Yeah. It's awful. Yeah, anyway, she comes home, Zach's there. They go talk in the backyard. It's beautiful and romantic. He loves her and they dance. The lights come on at just the perfect timing. Thank you, Kevin Pollak, her dad, for turning those on. And
they're romantic, and it allows Kevin Pollak to keep an eye on her. Not that he cares, because, you know, girls are just coming to the house all the time. He's like, here's another guy for you.
Yeah.
He's anyway, not at all surprised that it's a different guy.
Yeah.
Anyway, Zach's like, but I'm not backing out of the bet. And the bet was apparently that he's going to go nude at graduation, which we see him do. And
which is a sex crime.
I would like to believe it's like, it's just a crazy, like, man thong, because it seems like he gets arrested as soon as he drops the
fly
ball. But this is Southern California. You can do whatever you want at high school.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's
the end of the movie where, you know, sexual assault happened a couple of times.
So we have to discuss that that when her best friend, I call him Foggy because he's in the
Daredevil.
Yeah, he's in Daredevil. I don't know the character's name, but he learns because he was in the bathroom when Paul Walker was saying that he was going to have sex with Lainey, and he doesn't go find Lainey. He goes and finds Zach. Right?
Zach is up on the stage speaking, and Lainey is in the crowd, and he's like. And he interrupts his speech so that he could tell Zach to tell her something, and she's just right there, and they're best friends.
Yeah. By the way, Taylor Vaughn's acceptance speech, best speech ever. Those of you who voted for me, you did the right thing. The rest of you, what were you thinking about?
Yeah. Taylor's...
Oh, man.
Taylor's great. I mean, it's funny. Taylor Vaughn... It's so – okay, I kind of – I think she's great because she's funny, because it's how absurd. Like, how Taylor Vaughn seems to be playing, you know, like in Not Another Teen Movie or something. Like, she seems to be the character that is parodying She's All That, because she's so absurd and so crazy, and she does such crazy things, and she's such an obvious villain. Like, one – I remember when I first saw this movie the first time, I was – my big complaint was she is so cartoonishly villainous that when she calls out Lainey at the party, I don't see why Lainey cries, because it's so absurd of her to do that. Like, it's so – like, how could you be offended by that? You're just making a fool of yourself, Taylor Vaughn, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe.
She's terrible.
Yeah.
Oh, man. No, so there's some of these movies have some awful acting, and this movie has some awful acting, and I would say that Freddie Prinze Jr. does not do a great job of acting, but I think Taylor Vaughn is well done. I think Brock Hudson is well done.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So.
Yes.
I'm glad they're
this
together.
This movie is not unenjoyable. I was okay with this movie. And it at least has a functional script, unlike the previous two movies. Not a great script, but it is functional.
Functional, yeah. I mean, I don't know. It might be – the whole Pygmalion story is kind of like – it's – you know, Andy, you kind of joked that it wasn't like – you know, the original wasn't very good, and it's like, but I don't know, is the Pygmalion, like, do we need the Pygmalion story now?
We don't need it. Yeah. Like, not anymore, I don't think.
Yeah.
I get it. It was of a time when, like, because it's inherently patriarchal. It's like, because of my influence as a man, can change a woman, and a woman's worth is based on how much time and energy I am willing to put into her, and not, it is not inherent to her.
It's just a shaky foundation in 1999.
So does Can't Buy Me Love flip that, where it's the woman that has to lift the popularity of the man, although the plot though is that he is still rescuing her from a dire situation.
And the fact that he's exchanging money for it, and where there is some attraction there, makes that a little dicey too.
Yeah.
Like, that's like,
who's the actor? Is that Patrick Dempsey?
Young Patrick Dempsey. McDreamy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
By the way, She's All That cost $10 million to make, and it raked in $103 million.
Big hit.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And a 15% away from being fresh. It's our least rotten at 42%.
Hmm.
Yeah, makes sense.
Well, I think the title carried it a lot. I don't know. We'll see how we feel about the titles. I just want to say I just wish one person in the movie just kind of made the statement. Who the hell cares about who's prom queen? Like,
can you remember? Can you remember our prom king and queen?
And that's another thing about high school movies. It's like the people in high school do not care about this. Do not. Yeah. Yep. But I don't know. Maybe we were weird because, it seems kind of strange that these high school kids put so much effort into that particular thing because high schoolers don't.
My son John, your namesake, he was a homecoming king his senior year. So that's the only person who I can remember my name that ever got that. I don't know. Did Liz Winkle win? It beats me.
Does it say in the yearbook? Maybe we should get our yearbooks out and see.
I was gonna ask you if you all remember who won, because I
really don't.
I certainly don't.
No idea.
I just remember prom was at the courthouse in Provo.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. And I remember my date wore a dress that actually had like a bustle underneath it. And so as she walks down the stairs, I had to walk behind her instead of next to her, which was fascinating.
We missed the actual promenade because our limo broke down on the way back from Salt Lake.
Did we have a promenade?
Yeah.
I know that's what it's called, prom, but I thought we didn't have it.
No, if you remember in the building, right, there were like these two descending steps that met down in like a landing, and then one set of steps that came down, and that's what, so the guy and the girl came down the different set of steps and then met in the middle, right? I don't know if you remember that, but also what's weird is I learned that this is how the yearbook works. The pictures for prom have to be taken way before prom happens. So they found like four or five of us couples who they were pretty certain were going to go to prom in February. And they took us to the building and had us take pictures. And they did it in such a way that you were supposed to not be able to tell there were only 10 people in the room.
You were in the prom picture?
I was in prom pictures. Yeah. The prom picture that happened 3 months before prom.
Really?
That's funny.
I didn't even know. I didn't realize that. Okay.
Not in remotely the same clothes. Probably my choir tux was what I probably wore.
Wait, junior or senior year? I'll have to look this up.
Junior. So I wasn't in choir my junior year, so I don't know what I wore to the stupid prom pictures.
Because we didn't have a senior prom. We had senior dinner dance.
Senior dinner dance, which was in Salt Lake City.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. All right. Yeah. If anybody wanted our dissertation on Timpview dance... Danceology, that we just got.
As you guys have talked to people who don't live in Utah, is it insane how many dances we had? We had a dance at least every month, and most people I think we have two per year.
Yep.
And we must have had 10 dances in a school year.
Yeah, yep. I guess it was extremely important that we danced, that we kept the teenagers busy because...
Yep.
Because I don't know what else we do. We were all good
people. We would have gone and worked for a record store.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
It would have been bad. Crandall's. We all would have gone to Crandall's.
Crandall's
Sonic Garden.
I held up Crandall Audio at gunpoint, and they still wouldn't hire me. Really mad
I
about
went
that
out
was
to media play and said, "You gotta come on, guys. This place is giant. It's bigger than Empire Records. You can definitely hire me, right?"
Oh yeah, media play. Dang it, that was big. Okay, that's She's All That.
Yep.
Do you guys? Okay, should we do
awards?
Should we? Do you want to do awards? Okay, let's do awards first. Oh well, let's do contact info, shall we?
Oh yeah.
All right. First of all, go to iTunes, go to Spotify, go to wherever you find podcasts. Search for Yours, Mine, and Theirs, and subscribe. It helps us a lot. Maybe, I don't know. Gives us sponsor dollars, but not really. But just do it so we don't have to tell you to like manually download every time. Go to Facebook, yeah. Find the Yours, Mine, and Theirs group, and go ahead and join the group and watch that page, because that's when we do all the polls and that's when you decide what we watch and what genre of movie we watch. And also, most importantly, you get to see Roy take notes in real time, and that's always entertaining.
And twice per year get kicked off and endanger our website.
Yeah. You get to witness Roy go to Facebook jail in real time. Yeah, it's really great. We have a blog, Yours, Mine, Theirs, podcast.blogspot.com. If you go there, you can directly download every single MP3. They're all there, as far as I'm aware. And we have a phone number. It is 801-896-4542, 801-896-4542. Call that number. If for no other reason, it will be taken away if you don't call it. So call up and tell us how terrible we are, what we got wrong, and we will definitely play it. We'll totally do that. Let's see. While we're here, Andy, you run a podcast, a very successful podcast called Kiss Your Franchise Goodbye, and you're doing Disney Princesses. And I think I haven't listened to it yet, but I believe you just posted Pocahontas, which I may not listen to because I never got around to seeing Pocahontas.
I've never seen Pocahontas. Yeah.
Spoiler alert, we all hated it.
I imagine you
I've
did.
And one of Brooke's friends, who is half white, half Native American, gave us her perspective on it, and it was a lot of fun. but I wanted to announce this to both of you.
Okay.
Due to overwhelming pressure, because everyone keeps asking for it, we're going to do a bonus episode of Robin Hood.
Wow, cool.
So I know you two gents have talked about Robin Hood in the past.
Oodalali.
You would like to join us for Robin Hood. Open invite.
Okay.
So,
that sounds great.
Give me a date. I'll try to make it free. Yeah.
When you say that a girl is a fox, it's because of Maid Marian and Robin Hood.
It's because Robin Hood is so attractive that we call women foxes. Yeah.
And when you say she's a real awesome chick, you're talking about Lady Cluck.
Yeah.
Lady Cluck, yeah.
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 Yep.
That, or at least when we say that chick's got attitude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Okay. Robin Hood, my favorite Disney movie. Okay.
There's so many great voice actors in that film. It's amazing. And that's kind of like when the hippies had a shot at a Disney cartoon.
Right.
They did Robin Hood.
So y'all wore me down like a man in a rom-com. And I gave in to the pressure. And fine, we're doing Robin Hood. Look out for that in 2 weeks. We're going to
– awesome.
We did Pocahontas. We're doing Hunchback. We're doing Mulan. And I haven't decided whether we're going to do it after Mulan or after Princess and the Frog. So either
are you going to do Brave?
We are going to do Brave. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So since we're expanding outside of this and there are no rules anymore, we're just going to do any Disney animated film with a strong female protagonist. So
everything. Is she a princess? I know that her dad is the head of I don't know.
Yeah, Merida was made a princess.
Yeah.
So she is officially in.
Okay.
But she's a Pixar princess, right? Like, mm-hmm. Isn't she a Pixar or is she a Disney? Well,
Disney owned Pixar by that point.
Yeah. So
anyway. Okay.
Anyway.
Good deal.
Yeah. Nice. Okay.
We're doing Robin Hood.
That's exciting.
Yeah. Any place where you can find this podcast, you can find Kiss Your Franchise Goodbye. Yeah.
Probably in more places because we don't know what we're doing.
Right. I mean, we're not on Anchor. Usually I find your podcast by going to anchor.com/kissyourfranchisegoodbye. I think it works there.
And we only do it on Anchor because they're owned by Spotify and it automatically puts it onto Spotify.
Perfect.
Because that's like the, yeah. So no,
that's very convenient.
Yeah. So nice.
Awards.
All right.
Awards.
So we're going to do our special project afterwards. I'm not even going to say what our special project is, but so I might skip a couple of awards in favor of our special project that we have after this.
Okay. Can you give it a code name? Like Project Arcturus?
Yeah. How about Project Maxell?
Okay. Yeah. I hope I know what we're talking about
here. Okay. Yeah, I think you might. Maybe. Okay. Just think on the fly. Consider, you know, the inspiration of Freddie Prinze Jr. With a hacky sack in front of a bunch of people. I think you can manage. That. Yeah. You can.
Hack ease.
You can improv that. All right, Andy. Best title.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer tells you everything you need to know right there.
It does. In fact, you don't even have to see the movie. Roy. Yeah.
No, it's Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I also agree it's Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I kind of like, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, it's been around for like 30 years or whatever, just as a concept. But when, you know, it came out, like, hey, there's a new movie. It's about a slayer of vampires. And the slayer's name is Buffy. That was fun. Yeah. That was a fun title.
Apparently a good idea.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, best poster, Roy.
Oh, that's easy. It's Buffy the Vampire Slayer. You've got the yellow, which I love yellow, and you've got some sweet sticks. So
yeah, the steak, some sweet stems, right?
Stems, sure.
Yeah,
yeah.
The clueless for worrying. Andy.
Empire Records. Although I have one qualm with it.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the dog? I was promised a dog in this movie poster. There is no dog in this movie. I love the poster. This movie no needs dog. A dog.
There was a dog in the movie. It was a porcelain dog. I think
we
got a reaction from the porcelain dog.
We got a reaction shot of the porcelain dog who agreed with something profound Lucas said.
Yes. But yeah, probably not the same dog is in the poster. Yeah. Well, Andy, because of your information regarding the false dog, I'm going to have to bow out of poster because I picked Empire Records by default because there was a falseness with the Buffy poster because we're led to believe that those are Buffy's legs, but there wasn't one moment in the movie where Buffy didn't have the blue leggings on underneath her skirt. And so that's false.
Her midriff was always covered too, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and also in the She's All That poster, Rachel Lee Cook is wearing a dress that never existed in the movie.
In the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, I am crossing off this category completely. Bad poster. All right, podcast.
No answer. Yeah.
All right. Roy, best opening credits.
Sure, this was kind of tough because I didn't love the Buffy the Vampire Slayer opening credits with like the flashbacks to olden times and then the Empire Records opening credits. I don't remember. I think I went with She's All That. Probably all of these had kind of bad effects. Like I think the She's All That had like the goopy paint title.
Yes.
But I did really enjoy the song, which I think is that Prophecy by Remy?
Remy Zero, yeah.
Is that how it opens? Because that was in the closing credits. Remy Zero Prophecy as well. Maybe both? Was it in both?
Yeah, maybe both. I'm pretty sure that's Prophecy by Remy Zero to open up the movie.
Okay. I also said She's All That for the paint effects. Andy?
I said Empire Records because it sort of takes us slowly into the movie. Mm. There's the joke of like Lucas is closing he said, Cho has three very clear rules, and then he breaks all of those rules. And yeah, and there's also music, and he's drumming on the money and drinking his beer, and then he goes to Atlantic City and the credits are still going.
So. I guess I must admit the opening of Empire Records is kind of intriguing. You're like, what is going on? What's, you know, you're kind of let in, and then, you know, you're kind of stuck with a Breakfast Club kind of vibe for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay, Andy, best technology.
I like the romantic backyard lights.
Okay.
I want those lights in my backyard, and I want a switch to turn them on from inside.
Hmm. Huh. I'll work on that. All right, Roy.
So similarly, I went with the kidney shaped pool.
What? Why does he have to know what shape the? Is that what you said?
I don't know. Yeah. Why did? Why is it important? Like, you clean it the same, right?
I don't. Yeah, I assume you do. Yeah. Okay. My technology. I went with Lainey's foghorn.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So small, packs a wallop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good.
Okay. Andy, best outfit.
Best outfit, Liv Tyler's skirt and crop top.
And Doc Martens. That was mine. When you think of Empire Records, you think of what Liv Tyler's wearing in Empire Records, and it's the fuzzy crop top and plaid skirt Doc Martens.
Yeah. Okay.
Roy?
So my honorable mention is the red dress from She's All That, but my winner is Buffy's prom dress. It's like, it's almost like she's going to her own wedding, but she's getting married to Destiny.
Yeah.
That should be your alternate tagline.
Yeah. She is good boob placement. It is. Okay. All right, Roy, best name.
Best name is honorable mention to Taylor Vaughn, because that, like, you know exactly who she is with that name. but I'm giving it to Munge, who's one of the pew beaters.
Oh.
Munge. Oh, okay, that's a name. Good. Andy.
Okay, I have three. I'm sorry.
That's fine.
Jesse Jackson.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
That's Foggy's name, right?
Okay. Which is Foggy's name.
Yeah.
Brock Hudson, who we already mentioned. And then Lothos.
Lothos.
What kind of a name is that? But, yeah.
Yeah, Thanos was taken.
Yeah.
How about Lothos?
Lothos.
Okay, my best name is Rainwater Sky Sebastian. And that is just one of the names read off during the graduation ceremony, and She's All That.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. Roy, best food?
Supersized falafel balls.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's a good one. Okay, Andy.
Prom shrimp.
Oh, yeah.
Prom shrimp. Good. Okay, I went with, let's see, David Arquette and Luke Perry. They had to, they pooled their money and they got like one hot dog that they split. And like David Arquette ate the bun and Luke Perry ate the hot dog.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Okay, Andy, best alien. This is hard.
Oh, best alien. Okay, I mean, Donald Sutherland is kind of like the classic, right? But
yeah.
Pod People?
Oh, okay. Oh, right. Invasion of the Body Snatchers. He's
Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Yeah, well, I don't what am I saying? But I also had as runners up Clea DuVall, who was Misty, because she was in the faculty and was an alien. In that, and
by the way, what year was the faculty?
98.
Ugh, we could have watched the faculty for this. That would have been so great.
The faculty was my number two. If Roy had picked Buffy, I would have picked the faculty.
Really?
And we would have had two Supernatural high school
movies. The faculty is so good.
Yeah.
I love the faculty. Oh, well.
And Freddie Prinze Jr. for his time as a Jedi Knight. Kanan Jarrus.
Oh, okay. Did you watch the Freddie Prinze Jr. rant on some podcast about calling out Star Wars fans?
No.
I probably did, but I'm not remembering it offhand.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Because I hate Star Wars fans.
I know. It's always fun to hear like someone call out Star Wars fans. And so it was fun for
them. We're the worst. Star Wars fans. In my day, fans used to like something.
Yeah. I do agree. We are the worst, but the other ones are the worst. Okay. the worster, I guess is the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
Okay. Really quick, Roy, before you go, I'm going to go.
Where am I going?
Well,
I get it.
No. I just want to agree with Andy that my alien is Misty, who's Clea Duvall. Who is that? Your answer?
Clownface Misty.
Clownface Misty. Okay.
Wow. All right.
So we all picked Misty as alien.
Yeah.
But I picked her because she is so weird. She's even weirder than Taylor Vaughn. Like, what is her motivation for going up to Lainey and saying, "Hey, I think you should kill yourself"?
Oh, she's so awful.
And what kind of person do you, how sad do you have to be? Oh, wait. Okay. She's coming up on I have her in another award coming up. I'll save it. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Roy, best FX.
Mitch's performance art.
Oh, right. That's good effects.
Yeah.
It was like a camel that turned into like him and two dwarves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Andy, best effects.
That was mine too.
That was yours too.
Performance art show. Yeah.
Okay. Honorable mention to Pee-wee's arm getting ripped off and then just him holding his arm behind his back, I think. but I'm going to...
opportunity for some funny gags there. Like
$7 million budget.
I was waiting for him to like do the Pee-wee Herman voice and be like, "Somebody give me a hand," or I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, but my real answer is the part that you hated where Freddie Prinze Jr. says, "Okay, Taylor, so what happened?" But then behind them, as they're talking, Spring Break moves in to the quad where they're talking. Yep. And so it's just like an in-camera transition flashback, which I like.
Yeah. That's a good camera trick. I do like that.
Yeah.
Respect. Yeah.
Okay, Andy, best location.
The rooftop of Empire Records.
Oh, yeah. Very concert nice happens there. It's nice. It's nice. Yeah, you too played there. And the Beatles. Roy?
The abandoned carnival in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I almost picked that one. Yeah. The floats everywhere. It's vampires hanging out there. I put Cancun question mark because I can't remember where Spring Break was and she's all that. Was it Cancun?
I think it was Cancun, yeah.
Okay. Good. Okay, I'm going to skip this one. Okay, Roy, best guest star.
Okay, honorable mention to an already popular and already in movies and definitely already in television, but in this movie, uncredited student in the lunchroom, Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yeah.
That's an honorable mention. It's got to go to Ben Affleck because what a treat. 17-year-old Ben Affleck.
Yeah. No, I think Andy, you mentioned this in our chat. You were pointing at the screen. Yeah. You sent the GIF. We all did that. I put Ben Affleck. Did you put Ben Affleck too, Andy?
Yes, I did.
All right. Best guess of Ben Affleck.
I have a question. Did either of you in your middle school years watch a show called The Voyage of the Mimi in your science classes?
I don't think so.
No, that does not sound familiar.
Ben Affleck is in this series made for PBS and shown in public schools in Fairfax County, Virginia, called The Voyage of the Mimi, all about it's trying to teach kids science, and he's the bratty like 12-year-old kid who like goes on the boat and doesn't want to be there, and he's supposed to be the like the character that we care about.
So it's a Ben Affleck documentary.
Yes. But anyway, I was introduced to Ben Affleck apparently at a young age and then completely forgot about him until 1999 when suddenly he was everywhere. And then I remember like telling my brother, I'm like, "Hey, do you remember The Voyage of the Mimi from seventh grade science class?" And he's like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "Ben Affleck was in that. No way." Anyway.
Wow. So can I ask though, seriously, what's Sarah Michelle Gellar doing as an uncredited extra in this film? Is she already in a serious relationship with Freddie Prinze Jr. where she's just doing him a favor? Like, what is she doing?
I think that's what it was. I think they were in a relationship at the time.
She'd already done I Know What You Did Last Summer. She was already a star in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the TV show, and she'd done several movies.
And here's another thing. The same high school in She's All That, Torrance High School, was used for Buffy.
Oh, wow.
So she's probably just hanging out. See, I mean, because she doesn't say anything, right? She doesn't have any lines.
No, she just, like, says no thank you with her hand.
Yeah, she, like, acknowledges. I think the reason for that, like, if she said anything, then it would have been a law to, like, pay her, like,
sale
or minimum wage or whatever.
So it seems like the fact that she doesn't say anything leads me to believe that she was hanging out. That was her high school. She's, you know, she's dating Freddie Prinze Jr., And so she just like, yeah, I'll just do this as a favor kind of thing. Like, may as well have her in the movie. So which is why, I mean, I don't want to talk about it too much because I'll talk about it later. That scene was so awkward and weird and strange and doesn't belong in the movie.
But yeah. So I feel though that it seems like Freddie Prinze Jr. and Sarah Michelle Gellar would be super cool to hang out with. They seem like a super down to earth relatable couple, yes. But they probably would end up just being like the two Coreys and it would be super weird. But but it seems like they'd be really cool to hang out with.
I'm glad you brought this up because, yeah, again, us commoners, that's something I think about. Like, I bet it would be fun to hang out with Sarah Michelle Gellar and Freddie Prinze Jr. is honestly a thought that I've had this week.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Well, I mean, like, name a celebrity couple. And, like, who you could be like, it would be fun if they were my neighbors.
Right.
Yeah, and,
right,
like, yeah. We would just, like, see each other, invite them over to watch a basketball game, talk about stuff. I mean, they would be one of my top celebrity couples, I think. I mean, for me, Michelle and Barack Obama would be my number one, but that's because I'm a weirdo. And I think the Secret Service would keep me away from them probably. Don't let that Andy guy talk to us. I'm saving him.
Yeah. Okay, really quick, before we move on to best guest, and because we all said Ben Affleck was our favorite guest, yes, as a basketball, yep, player, I just want to point out that one of the basketball players on the, not Sunnydale, but whatever high school Buffy goes to in this movie, was a straight-up werewolf because it was the hairiest high schooler I've ever seen. It's like, don't put that extra in a tank top like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Teen Wolf.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
So it could have been – it was Teen Wolf. Yeah, actually, I think that's what I wrote in my notes. Like, is Teen Wolf hanging out in this vampire high school? Fitting. Okay. And yeah, he is on the basketball team. Roy, best external recurring character.
Okay, I gotta find it. It
best
is Charlie.
Yours, mine, and theirs recurring character. We should really rename this.
Yeah, Charlie Dell. He's the supersize my balls guy, and he's also in Fight Club.
Whoa!
Oh,
deep,
yeah,
pull. Yep. Deep pull. Who was he in, mm-hmm, Fight Club?
He is a doorman.
Wow. Okay, Andy, do you have someone who was in a previous Yours, Mine, and Theirs movie?
You devoted an entire episode to him. Mr. Rutger Hauer.
I thought about picking him. Yeah.
Yeah.
In our Hour of Need, I believe. Yes. Yeah.
Good episode. Go listen to it. Very good.
It's great. Yeah, thank you. It's episode number, fill in number later. John, mental note, put this in editing. And end note. Okay. Okay. External recurring character for me is Matthew Lillard, who was in Scream.
Ooh, oh, yeah.
Big fan of Matthew Lillard. I've already said that.
Yeah.
Okay. Andy, internal recurring character.
A choreography? Does that count?
That counts. There are dances in all of these movies. Yeah, too much dancing, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
You guys heard my frustration about
Mr.
how much
Music
dancing.
Town over there.
Yeah. That's why I want Music Town to join. I felt that Empire Records seriously had a problem with too much dancing. Like, it was a disease. Yeah.
They
too
needed
much dancing.
Some structure over there.
They had They had that dancing plague from France in the 13th century or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Roy, internal.
Alexis Arquette, who's the DJ at the prom in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and Mitch in She's All That.
That's amazing. Okay, Alexis Arquette was the DJ. That's who it was. Okay. All right, my internal recurring character is Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Of course, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and in
Sarah
She's
Michelle
All That,
Sarah
she
Michelle
was – Buffy the Vampire Slayer was just hanging out in the gym. Yeah. Okay.
Very good.
Andy, best death?
I mean
– there's one answer.
I know
you
guys –
there's only one answer. Paul Reubens.
Paul Reubens.
Yeah, it's Paul Reubens.
Yeah, you guys say – I've never really laughed very hard at the Paul Reubens death.
I laughed more than any other part in the movie.
It's what it is, but like when he's dying, it's the part where he like pauses and then like kicks the thing a couple times.
There are some parts better than others. I kind of don't like the second, I kind of don't like that. The death I picked is Luke Perry's soul patch when he's reborn as Buffy's boyfriend. He shaves it off with a straight razor. Okay, Roy, best villain.
Well, according to Buffy the Vampire Slayer, it's bugs because they are ruining the environment.
It's true, even today.
Yeah, there are no bugs. They've been dying because of the environment. It's weird.
Yep.
Okay, Andy, villain.
The man, a.k.a. Mitchell, who owns Empire Records.
Yeah. The man, Mitchell. He just... Mitchell. I don't know. He just dressed for the 90s occasion. My villain is also from Empire Records, and it's Lucas. Not because he stole the money, but because he says all these dumb things, and I hate him. Okay.
Oh, you would hate Lucas.
Andy, best hero.
Best hero, Buffy.
Okay.
She's great.
Roy?
I'm going to go with the principal in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, who never loses his cool, maintains order.
He gives detention to the corpses.
Giving detention to the corpses, yeah.
Okay, no, I'm surprised. Oh, wait, Andy, what?
Yeah, that's a great Stephen Root performance. I was looking to see if you'd ever had him in a movie before, because I wanted to do internal recurring character with him, but I couldn't. Mm-hmm. I couldn't immediately find one.
I actually wrote that down. Stephen Root, RC, which is in my notes. That means, you know, he's up for awards for recurring character. But I didn't check to see if he was anything. I just assumed he was, but I guess he's not.
Man, you would think so. You keep going. I'll look through his.
We'll write this down. Stephen Root for the future. Yeah, we're surely he's going to win in the future. Okay, well, my hero is Preston. Prestone, I love that guy, you know, from Can't Hardly Wait. Just kidding, not the Preston from Can't Hardly Wait. Dulé Hill's Preston.
I love Dulé Hill, yeah.
Yeah, he's the only one who's like, hey, you guys, the stuff we're doing is kind of messed up, right? Like,
yeah.
And he stands up to Brock.
Cool guy. Yeah. Okay, Andy, best goof.
When Paul Rubens is hanging off of the front of the van, like in the action scenes... the stunt guy is in like the middle of the van, but then in the close-ups, he's very clearly over on the side, like face to face with Luke Perry.
All right. Bad multiple takes. Didn't get on his mark again. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Roy, do you have a goof?
Yeah. We've already mentioned it 100 times. It's Chandler tanning in the shade.
Oh, right. Right. Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I have some honorable mention goofs. The first one is the fact that these three movies were picked. The second is when Taylor dumps the wine on Lainey's dress because Taylor is Taylor and she's the worst. And then Lainey's dress is completely dry in the following, you know, cut. Mm. But then the winner is in the credits for Buffy the Vampire Slayer when the credits start and it says Candy Clark as Buffy's mom. And then the next credits are cast and it lists the rest of the cast. And I don't know why they did the credits that way. Why is Candy Clark as Buffy's mom in a completely different place than the rest of the cast? And they're right next to each other too. Like, did they screw up the credits that they had to slip that in first or something?
No, so. Like sometimes it's contractual. Like it's like I will sign on to the script that I get to be the and Julia Roberts or, you know, and Robert Downey Jr.
See, I guess I assume it's something weird like that, but that's just so weird. Buffy's so mom, weird. Right?
Yeah.
She doesn't even have a name in the movie, and she's listed separately. So there's something – it's just weird to me. Okay. Andy, best LOL moment.
Oh, do I have a best LOL moment?
I do.
All right. While you're looking, Andy. Yeah, go ahead.
It's from Buffy the Vampire Slayer when one of her friends just says, what a homeless. putting down the homeless guy.
Oh, man. A lot of homeless shame in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah.
Really quick, I'm going to say my honorable mention, which is in She's All That, when Taylor breaks up with Zach, and then it pans out, and you see the entire school just staring at them in silence. Like, the whole school is watching the breakup happen just for a second, and then they go back to doing what they were doing. But then also, of course, Paul Reubens' line when Luke Perry rips off Paul Reubens' arm, and Paul Reubens looks down and says, "This was a new jacket." And then he says to the other vampire goons, "Kill him a lot."
I found mine. I had it written as funniest moment.
Oh, that counts.
Yeah.
My problem.
Yeah. It's my problem. Same.
Mark, you love Guar. You should join the band. Now it's time to die.
That was a great moment when he envisions himself in Guar, and then the horror of Guar killing him. I should have picked that as my best death. That would have been pretty good. Ah, dang it. Okay. Key of D minor. Roy.
You should know that Steven Root is in Star Trek The Next Generation for Unification 1 and Unification 2.
Oh, he must be some kind of Vulcan. Yeah. Okay, there we go. That counts.
And none of our movies.
Wow, none of our movies. Okay, but none he is in Star Trek. We can count it for Star Trek.
We count Star Trek, sure. Yeah. Okay, key of D minor in Empire Records, Zellweger's Walk of Shame.
Oh, when she walks out of barely being freshened up with Rex Manning.
Yeah.
Okay, Andy, saddest moment.
I already mentioned it, the conversation between Deb and Joe when she's doing his taxes. I would like to point out that the song, The Ballad of El Gudo, sung by Evan Dando, is actually in the key of C sharp, which is also D flat. So, but yes.
Okay.
And there are times in the song where he's hitting the actual D flat minor chords. Those are obviously the saddest moments in the scene.
Andy, I feel bad that because I feel like I made you check the keys of every song of all of these.
No. What I did was I'm like, that's the saddest scene. And then I'm like, I wonder what key the Ballad of El Gudo is in. And then I looked and I'm like, it's in C sharp. What are the chords for that? And I'm like, there's a C sharp minor in that song.
Wow. So Nigel Tufnel, he wasn't kidding around. He was serious about that D minor stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Roy, did you say yours?
I did. It was great.
Okay. I'll listen to it later.
Yes, you will.
Okay. I went with Clea DuVall in the bathroom at the party. Oh, and yes. And she throws up, and then she tells Lainey, "How does it feel to clean up my puke and know that I'm going to get into the college I want and you're not, and you're still going to be here?" Or something like that. She says something like that. And it's not sad because of Lainey. It's not a sad moment for Lainey. It's like, how sad is it for Clea DuVall that she pukes and passes out and still just has no shame about that? So I feel sorry for Clea DuVall. Okay. Okay, Roy, your favorite, the WTH moment.
Yeah, it's Pubes Pizza from She's All That.
Yes.
The close-up of the pubes going in between the teeth.
Yeah, that was nuts. I'll get to that later.
I tried to scrub that from my memory, so
yeah.
I didn't even...
Andy.
I had also Mark getting eaten by Guar.
Oh, that's great. Okay.
Also,
I went with Lainey's art show and the confusion about what that art show was all about, and also the confusion with everybody who appreciated the hacky sack moment of the art show.
They just love art, John.
I guess.
Art is love, John.
Explain his art to you.
Art is love. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, Lainey brought him to specifically art shame him, and it backfired.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, and I'm going to get to this also, but the fact, and it, I guess it's just a matter of it not being explained, but Buffy just freezing and not doing anything whenever Lothos is around. Just like, but he's right there. You know, I swear the game mustache is fixed. That Harlem Globetrotter was just spinning the ball, and he was using a ladder. Just take the ball.
Yeah, a ladder.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
Did you guys ever read that Onion article about the Harlem Globetrotters NFL team that had like won 400 games in a row? Anyway, okay, keep going.
No. Okay, send it to me. Okay, best, Roy, best scene.
Sure, I'm going to go with the almost kiss in She's All That. And, like, they're, like, pouring out their souls. It was so-so. Zach's pouring out his soul sounds really stupid. Mm-hmm. But at least hers is heartfelt. But it's just that moment where he goes to kiss her, and then he stops, and her eyes are still closed, but you can see the confusion that registers on her face. I think she really acts the heck out of that 10-second moment. So I like it.
Right. Andy scene.
I want to give it to the Rex Manning music video because that's really great. But okay, really, in the same vein, the dance number and She's All That at the prom.
The Rockefeller Skank.
20 minutes of Rockefeller Skank. Yes.
That was my answer too. That was my answer too.
Oh, scene. Wow. Yeah.
It tickles me so much to just with the backstory of that scene that the whole school had to gather together to practice something, and like how exciting was it to actually do it at prom when they all had to practice it all the previous days? Okay, Andy, also best actor, please.
Best actor, Robin Tunney, Deb.
Deb. Okay, yeah, because of that scene you mentioned. Okay, that's a good case for that.
Yeah, and she's that perfect mix of sad and angry at the same time, and it's like actually very hard to like to walk that line and still be sympathetic and be so abrasive. And I'm like, the fact that I can like that she is awful and that I come away with just the most empathy and love for her is like, I don't know. And she's like almost crying every single moment of that movie.
Yeah.
And it's just, yeah.
Well, doing quarterly taxes are hard.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah.
Okay, Roy, actor.
I'm unashamedly giving it to Matthew Lillard.
I would have given it to Matthew Lillard if I didn't pick him for external recurring character. So that's fine. I crossed out Paul Reubens because I'm going to go ahead and give it to Christy Swanson.
Oh, wow.
I kind of feel like as many problems as Buffy the Vampire Slayer the movie has, I think Christy Swanson is an awesome Buffy. Yeah. And in a lot of ways, she's my Buffy. She's my Buffy in a lot of ways. Maybe she shouldn't be. Because I like Michelle Geller too. Anyway, good job, Christy Swanson. That's all I'm saying. Okay, Andy, any questions you have that we haven't answered?
Yeah, why don't the vampires turn to dust? And why can they fly? And why don't they always fly?
Why do they burn when they get hit with alcohol?
Yeah. That was a question I had. Actually, my question is, Pike drinking holy water? Is that what he has?
That was another question. But yeah. Yes.
Why
the vampire rules in general don't make any sense.
Why would Lothos not kill her when she's weak? And then also, like, they know she's the Chosen, but then, like, 10 minutes later, they're like, she's the Chosen?
Yeah.
Right?
There was a weird plot of the movie where she had to run and kill the basketball player because I guess Lothos didn't know she was the Chosen One.
Even though, like, she was there with Donald Sutherland.
And yeah. So it's, like, weird stuff like that where you're just like, Buffy! So annoying. Okay, so anyway, I don't know if we're going to answer those questions because Buffy the Vampire Slayer is just – it's aggravatingly full of questions. there's a scene – okay, I just want to say there's a scene – did I say this when we were recording? When Luke Perry cuts the music out and then Buffy is just about to be seduced by Lothos. She's like, oh, Merrick said the music would stop and then everything would be clear. And then that somehow breaks the spell that Lothos had that we don't understand. It was a spell. It was just implied. And then she's able to get away. And then she just runs away from Lothos and then she just stabs him later. Okay. I know that wasn't a question. That was just a long statement. It wasn't a question. I'm just saying I'm confused. It's just weird and it's bad. It's bad movieing. Okay.
So, honestly, as far as like vampire lore goes, this is one of the worst movies.
I guess at the time in 1992, I don't know if we were acolytes of vampire lore. We're just like, okay, vampires, we don't get them, so whatever. I think they're supposed to die if you stab them, and that's all we did.
Yeah.
Okay. I have to ask this because I seriously don't know what happened in this scene. But the pube scene, I call it the pube pizza porno pepper scene because it had Kieran Culkin doing the fresh ground pepper, which I guess is just him being cute in the high school. But then those two guys, they're like, hey, check this porno mag out, like in the middle of high school lunch. And then why did they put the pubes on pizza? Like, what was the goal and what were they trying to accomplish? And I seriously don't know what happened. What was happening in that scene?
The porn was just a distraction so they could sneak the pubes on the pizza, which I also don't understand because we're done making you look at porn, go back and eat your pizza. He's just not going to notice there is like a 3-inch high clump of pube on his pizza.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess it was just a distraction
to get the pubes. Yep.
Okay. Bullying isn't necessarily like logical.
I suppose so. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it was just a convoluted amount of bullying in the scene.
Yeah.
With several different factors, and Sarah Michelle Gellar is kind of part of it, but not really. Okay. 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 And then we already talked about like, why did Foggy tell Freddie Prinze Jr. instead of Lainey? We already talked about that. Let's see.
For plot. It right. happened that
Rose
way
before plot. Hose.
Yeah.
Wait, no.
Okay. My last question is Pike the equivalent of Spike?
I don't
know.
So I thought that's how that was going to be, but the two characters have nothing in common.
Yeah, right. I wondered this a lot. Like, did Joss Whedon, when he made the TV show, was like, because I know he said he had this huge plan for the character and all of these characters. Did he just, like, because the movie happened, did he just start over with character names? And like, because I assume Pike was kind of his idea of Xander, but then his name is Pike and it's just so close to Spike that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, yeah. Whatever. Yeah, I don't count the TV show. Not my canon. Sorry. Okay, sorry. I'm just being a jerk about the TV show. The TV show is really good. Okay. Roy, what was your favorite line?
You mean titular line?
You can do titular line if you want.
We're just saying quote. We're saying quote. Okay, saying my quote. Favorite quote. Quote. Yeah, okay, so it's, baby, can you not do that right now? I'm reading for the new spelling drama, too, and I really don't want to smell like your spit.
Good line. Okay, Andy line.
Brock Hudson.
Brock.
He's afraid he'll smell like her spit because she's licking his chest.
I'm sorry, John, but it's, who knows where thoughts come from? They just appear.
Oh, a Lucas line. Who knows where thoughts come from? Yeah. That's okay. There's only one good line in all of these movies. Freddie Prinze Jr. goes over to Rachel Lee Cook's house. It was like when he tries to talk her into going to the beach, like earlier in the day, she like left or something. And he's like, oh, where did she go? So he goes over to her house and he goes, what was that? And then she goes,
oh, yeah,
I was busy. And then Freddie Prinze Jr. goes, yeah. Busy wigging.
That's a pretty great quote.
It's a great quote. Yeah. Okay. All right, Roy, you've been yearning for it, but your best hit your low line.
Oh, I just thought that's what you were asking for. But yeah, here we go. So it's from Empire Records. Attention, Rex Manning fans. To your left, you will notice a shoplifter being chased by night manager Lucas. This young man will be caught deep fried in a vat of hot oil and served to our first 100 customers. Just another tasty treat from the gang at Empire Records.
Oh, I did not like how Lucas had superpowers when he was chasing the shoplifter. He was just like Bugs Bunny just appearing around corners.
Defying time and space.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Yep.
Okay, Andy, titular.
Damn the man, save the empire.
Records.
All right, I'll count Records. It. I'll count it. Okay, well, the best titular line is definitely the she's all that rap.
The whole rap.
Yeah, the whole rap where it ends with she's all that. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, Roy, go ahead. Do your favorite tagline and your taglines.
Sure. So I think it's she knows a sucker when she sees one from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yep, that's the answer.
Yeah, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Killer Prom, and then Empire Records. Ask yourself, what would Lucas do? Sorry,
Boom.
There it is.
Boom.
Yeah, she's all that from Bob Ross to Prom Boss.
Oh, wow.
She's Bob Ross.
Yeah, I kind of got the inspiration from goth to boss, but she wasn't really goth anyway.
Yeah, that's good. Okay. All right, Andy, taglines.
They're selling music, not selling out.
Okay.
I like that one. Yeah, but the Buffy one, very, very good. So, yeah. Great. My alternate taglines. This would really make a much better TV show.
That's good.
Empire Records. Who knows where film scripts come from? They just appear. And she's all that. It's like Clueless, but Pygmalion instead of Emma.
Oh, yeah. That's a good way to say it. Okay, my favorite tagline, she knows a sucker when she sees one who said that. Okay, my new Buffy tagline is, she's staking out a new click.
Ooh.
Oh.
Then my Empire Records tagline is, the Empire strikes back at the man.
Nice.
And then the She's All That tagline is, taking off glasses can make you the prom queen without you even knowing. Okay, speaking of...
Never worked for me.
I want to see his... Do you guys know of any movie where, you know, because we've all seen the, okay, the girl takes off her glasses and like spins her hair around and she's beautiful. Is there any movie where someone puts glasses on a girl and realizes how beautiful she is? Because I want to see that scene.
Well, there is the scene in Arrested Development where,
that's what I was thinking,
where Job keeps trying to get Kitty to take her glasses off, then back on, then adjust her hair.
Oh, that's pretty good. Okay, yeah. That counts. I would love to like adorkify a girl, and it's like, oh my gosh, you are adorkable. <That's>, and then the guy falls in love.
Could you please cover your eyes? I don't want to look at your
eyes. So in season 4 of Buffy, there's a scene where Buffy and Willow both put their hair back in bandanas because they're cleaning up their apartment, and it is like the hottest that the two of them have ever been. I am all about dorkifying characters.
They have their protective cleaning glasses on and everything. It's
yeah.
Like, yeah. Nice. Yeah. Okay. I'll Very watch hot. For that in season 4. Yeah. Okay. Let's get to special awards before we get onto our special project. Actually, I don't think this is one of the ones we listed, but what's the 90s-est of all of these movies?
Oh, man.
I say
Empire Records.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The corporate talk and stuff. That's just like, that's what we lived through in the 90s a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I'll start with this one. Who was I? Out of all these characters, who was I in my 90s high school? And I had a hard time. And not that I ever did this, but I feel like the guy I was the weird pube pizza kid.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I didn't do that. No. The guy who munged.
Shermanator.
The Shermanator. I'm like, I kind of feel like that's how people saw me anyway. Yeah, just like that weird kid.
Okay.
I think I was most like Jesse Jackson.
I thought you were going to say Jesse Jackson, yeah.
Ancillary to the dorky girl, but not really in a story of my own.
I think it's so weird because we never see it, but the fact that Jesse Jackson is not the gay best friend, that he does like girls because he liked Anna Paquin, but for some reason he doesn't like Lainey, that was like strange to me. But I think I just need to come to terms with that. It's like, okay, you know what? They can be in a platonic relationship even though she's really hot, and that's fine.
Yeah, and the script couldn't handle a ducky subplot. So.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and you know, we need more platonic love rather than unrequited love, probably, in movies.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, Roy, who are you?
I think I'm going with Mackenzie Seiler. I think, I'm...
Because you went to an all-girls school?
I went to an all-girls school.
Yeah.
She, by the way, her dress was right up there for best outfits.
Right.
Yeah.
Her prom dress was pretty killer.
Right. Well, she's been waiting her whole life to go to prom because she was in that girls' high school. And and she hooked up with kind of the first guy she talked to there. I mean.
She was also for all the shrimp. Yeah. She's like, where'd all the shrimp go? I can smell them.
Yeah. It was, but you hooked up with Anna Paquin in a high school dance, though, right, Andy? That's why you
picked
Jesse James.
Although
I didn't even realize that was Anna Paquin until like when this podcast started, when we started recording a couple hours ago.
Yeah, so. Although I will say my actual prom date, in retrospect, way out of my league. So, yeah. Wow.
Nice.
You went with Liz Winkle.
No, I went with Abby Atherton. Did either of you know her?
I don't know Abby Atherton.
I only knew Abby Hawkins. That was
the
only Abby.
Yeah, that's the Abby I knew. Was she in your grade? Yeah.
Yeah, she was in my grade. Yeah, okay. She was a junior. Nice. Junior prom. Yeah.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Good job.
So, yeah. Took someone from my own class. But, you know, again, I had, you know, back to the idea of, like, platonic friendships – I had strong platonic relationships with many girls.
Yeah, and I feel the same way.
I think, like, any of them could have maybe turned into romantic relationships. A few of them could not have, but some of them could have if, like, things had – but most of them, very happy being friends with them. They're great.
Yeah, I think most of them – I think – I always had that tension. I was really – well, I was just kind of like – it was always in the back of my head, maybe because I saw so many high school movies where I'm like, I can't just be friends with this person. I have to like this – well, no, that's not what it was. Usually I just liked a person because I just liked a lot of people. So that was my deal.
I was just too awkward to like actually do something about anything. So
yeah. Yeah. I mean, and totally me too. It's like I liked so many girls in high school and in college, and we were friends, and it was probably more difficult for me than it was for her because I liked them. I liked her. Yeah. Happened to her. Okay.
Yep.
Let's see. I'm going to skip that one for now. Okay, Roy, what do you have for best – dance party. I think we kind of know this one.
It's got to be She's All That.
Yeah, it's the She's All That dance party. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And the most 90s haircut.
That's AJ.
Yeah, agreed.
AJ's
hair. The same hair as Jack from Titanic.
Yes, yes. Okay.
And Billy Zane from Titanic.
I think AJ wins. I put Jesse. He just kind of had that straight hair too, but yeah, very 90s. Okay. Yeah. Let's ease into our special project. What was the best soundtrack of these?
I don't know who you're asking. If you're asking me, this is going to be a big anchoring bias category here, mm-hmm. John, because I owned one of these soundtracks. Andy owned one of these soundtracks. I don't know if you owned any, but just from having listened to She's All That, 100 times and the other soundtracks never, that's my pick because I'm most familiar with those songs.
Yeah.
Right. Because you bought it for the Sixpence None the Richer song.
I didn't buy it because you can't buy the She's All That soundtrack. I recreated it using Napster and IMDb.
Oh, okay.
Back in the late 90s.
Oh, what would Music Town think? Okay. Andy?
I owned Empire Records. I had the Toad song and I think a couple of other songs from the Buffy soundtrack elsewhere. But yeah, Empire Records is my number one for also anchoring bias reasons, but respect to all of these, they're all good.
I picked Empire Records just for quantity.
Yeah.
Just because I mean, I didn't really look at the official soundtrack of the songs on it, but what, there are like 40 songs that are like played sometime during the movie. So,
and if you were to list all of those songs, best to worst, the top 20 are not on the actual CD.
Right. You'll have to let me know. Cause I picked a few on my, okay. Yeah. Oh,
No, that's so okay. That's
created,
fine.
For our special project, yes. I based it solely off of what was available to be purchased, which I guess doesn't work for She's All That. But I didn't base it off of what's credited to the film. That would have changed things for
me. Anyway, we should have discussed our rules. That's fine. Yeah. A little bit anyway. More. Okay, each of us made a playlist. We combined the three movies. It's like, okay, 10 songs. What's the soundtrack of the 90s based on these movies? And so let's have it. So we can do this right now. Okay, actually, are we good on time? I don't know if we have good. To talk to Josh or anything.
He's available starting now, but he's good. We'll be there in 5 or 10 minutes. This isn't going to take that long.
Shouldn't. Well, we always say it's not going to take too long.
Yeah.
We'll see. Andy, why don't you go first? Go ahead, and I want to hear your track listing. I can't wait.
Okay. Starting it off strong, Stretch Princess, Sugar. Number two, Toad the Wet Sprocket, Crazy Life. Little song about Leonard Peltier, the American Indian movement activist wrongfully jailed. Also, the idea behind the song Freedom by Rage Against the Machine. Toad the Wet Sprocket's version, a little bit lighter than the Rage Against the Machine version.
Wow.
Just saying. But yeah, same guy. Anyway, number three, Ass Ponies, Little Bastard. Number four, Edwin Collins, A Girl Like You. Number five, The Cranberries, How, which is the better of the two Cranberry songs on Empire Records, okay, and not the one that's actually on the official CD. Six, Fatboy Slim, Rockefeller Skank. Mm-hmm. Number seven, Susanna Hoffs, doing a classic from Oingo Boingo, We Close Our Eyes. Number Yay. Eight, Evan Dando, The Ballad of El Gudo, from our moment of D minor. And okay, I have a substitution I would like to put in here that wasn't in any of these. The Martinis, Free. I would like to replace Everywhere on the Soundtrack of Empire Records with The Sundays, Wild Horses. I know it wasn't on here, but I feel like that is actually a spiritual song that should have come on here. Number 10, final song, Gin Blossoms, Till I Hear It From You. Mm. Hidden track, Rex Manning, Say No More, Mon Amour.
Okay. All right, way to cheat and get it in.
Yep.
That's fine. Yep. That's fine with me. If it was another song, I probably wouldn't have counted it. Yeah. All right, Roy, track list.
Sure. So I didn't order it, but I did now while Andy was talking. I did it quickly. So let's see.
That's right.
Starting it off, number one, Baby Got Going by Liz Phair.
Yeah.
It's a rockin' little song. A Girl Like You by Edwin Collins. Number three, yes. Keep It Coming, CNC Music Factory.
Nice.
So number four, Till I Hear It From You, The Gin Blossoms. Number five, 66 by the Afghan Whigs.
Yes.
Number six, do I have a number six? There it is. Sugar by Stretch Princess. Seven, Rockefeller Skank by Fatboy Slim. Eight, We Close Our Eyes by Susanna Hoffs. Nine, Crazy Life by Toad the Wet Sprocket. And ending it this way because I have to, Kiss Me by Sixpence None the Richer.
All right. You guys missed a lot of these songs. That's fine. Okay, track number one. I hate this song, but I had to include it because it's been in my head for a week. And that's Sugar High by Coyote Shivers. All I can think of is Renee Zellweger doing when she does that singing. Yeah. But it's been in my head. So, okay, track two, Edwin Collins, Girl Like You. I think that made all the lists, of course. Yeah, it's a very important song. Okay, now we get into what I call the parenthetical section, which is all the songs with parentheses, which I always love a song with parentheses in the title because it's like, hey, why did you put the parentheses in here? We can't really say that out loud. But first of all, Rex Manning, of course, Say No More, and then in parentheses, Bon Amour. I love that song, and I don't care what the crappy people at Empire Records say. It's the best song they dealt with all day. Cool. It's great. okay, then next, Money. And then in parentheses, That's What I Want by Flying Lizards.
Mm.
And then If You Want Blood, and then in parentheses, You've Got It by AC/DC. okay, then we're going to go into another Empire Records song, Drill What You Are, which is a really weird song that's very 90s.
I like that song a lot.
Yeah.
I love that song, yeah.
Remy Zero, Prophecy, played at the opening and ending of She's All That.
That was my last one cut. That was my number 11.
Really? Was it number 11? Okay. And then number 8, the She's All That rap done on the quad, the She's All That movie. And then number 9, you guys, Give It To Me, Baby, by Rick James.
That song wasn't written in the 90s. I don't think of it as a 90s song.
It is a 90s song because it was in your favorite 90s movie of all time that you've shared with your children.
This isn't my favorite 90s movie of all time.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
All right. And then ending the same way Empire Records ends with This Is The Day by The The.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
I had to cancel the CNC Music Factory song, and I had to cancel We Close Our Eyes, and I had to cancel the Guar song, and the Throwing Muses song, which I liked all of those, so. So anyway, yeah. Good.
Best song time? We picking a best song?
Yeah, best song.
Okay. I'm going to go with the opening line is You Walk In Just Like Smoke from 66, The Afghan Whigs.
Okay. Yeah. Andy, best song.
I didn't include it on my soundtrack, but the best song is, as John included, You Want Blood. You got it.
Oh, nice.
It just doesn't really fit with the rest of the movie.
There's a good cult song. There's a good cult song on Buffy as well.
There is a good cult song. That's a good song.
The cult. What is it? City something? All the cult songs say city. Yeah. okay. No, my best song is... I'm doing it. This is kind of a spite pick, I guess. But it's definitely Say No More, Mona More. Yeah, it's great. It's like, where is that video? Like, why can't we see the video? Why isn't that like a special feature on the DVD? We need to see the video.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, I guess it's time to rank the movies.
Got to rank them.
Andy, third favorite. This will be tricky. Oh,
this is so hard. Buffy. Yeah.
Okay. Buffy. Roy.
So... we're going to get through this, and it's whatever, but I watched all three movies, but there's serious separation here for me, and I feel like everyone else is taking crazy pills. I'm the only one not on crazy pills.
Okay.
But my number three is Empire Records. Anyway, it's pretty close to my number two, and I could have switched.
No, I'm the one around. On crazy pills. That's fine. That's a...
Anyway, Empire Records, number three, John.
I pick Buffy for number three.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, what's your number two?
My number two, I'm going to have to go She's All That.
Okay. Well, my number two is Empire Records.
And no, my number Buffy. Two. My number two is She's All That.
Okay.
Okay, and Roy loves She's All That.
Well, that puts Andy's number one at Empire Records.
Yes.
My number one is Empire Records, which I've been complaining about Empire Records pretty much my whole life.
What's your favorite thing to do on this podcast? Your favorite thing to do is talk about how much you hate a movie and then you rank it number one.
It is my very favorite thing to do of all time. Yes. But it's the thing is, okay, I've done a lot of soul searching the past week, and I've come to the conclusion that as much as I have this vendetta against Empire Records, it's also kind of the one that, like, someone wanted to say something with it. I don't agree with what they had to say, but the She's All That and Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I felt were just a little bit, just didn't have any passion to them. But
well, so the Lone Ranger movie in the early 1980s probably tried to say something too, but it sucked. So I don't know. So I just feel like Buffy the Vampire Slayer kind of, it really let me down. I remembered it being a lot better than it was.
Yeah.
And Empire Records, I appreciate what it was trying to say, but it was a mess.
Yes.
Yep. And then I just love She's All That. And I don't know. We can say anchoring bias again or whatever, but it just feels like it's like considerably better than the other two films. But anyway,
As I said, She's All That is the most functional movie here in terms of the basics, and while I don't agree with the concept of having what's that called when you know something's trash but you still love it?
Guilty pleasure.
I don't believe in guilty pleasures, but if I had a guilty pleasure movie, it would be Empire Records. It is by no stretch of the imagination like a good film. But I enjoy watching it. I enjoy listening to the soundtrack. I don't know. I don't get it. I'm the one taking crazy pills.
You're like,
yeah. Well, okay, hey. let me take can I just take down She's All That a little bit?
Go ahead.
Well, okay, now I don't mean, well, I do kind of mean it. Like, I want it to be that, but just this is another my perspective kind of things. And like, from my perspective, I don't like Empire Records because it was about a bunch of misfits telling me that they're cool and they're part of this misfit gang, and you know, I should want to be part of this misfit gang, and I didn't. I feel the same way for She's All That. I kind of feel like She's All That was made by the popular kids, and it's like, this is like, the popular kids think prom kings and queens are cool and this is what's important, and people care about who's popular in school when we really didn't. And I'm just kind of, I'm dumbfounded whenever I watch She's All That, because if I were Lainey, I'm like, I have a really good life not being the prom queen, and I shouldn't have to be defined by that.
So someone else thinks that in order for her to be happy, she has to be popular?
Yeah, it's like, I feel like She's All That is just such an invasion, like of one character. And so I kind of get why she's frustrated. And I guess it was a good time because, you know, she got a couple of really hot dates, and so, you know, that would be fun for anybody, I'm sure. But
Paul Walker and Freddie Prinze Jr.
Yes,
you kidding me?
Yes, yeah.
Well, like, they all look down on her, and is like, oh, her dad cleans my pool.
Yeah.
Have you seen that guy's house?
Yeah, I know. He's doing pretty well.
I think they're doing very well. That is a million. $2 million home,
like,
now.
Clea DuVall probably lives in like a 1.5 bedroom home, and she's just she knows she's great. Container. She just has that kind of she's that deluded that she thinks she's happy. She's like the happiest girl in school, but all she does is be mean to people. So I don't know.
All right. So the movie we didn't watch, 10 Things I Hate About You, which is really highly rated by Rotten Tomatoes, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Good movie.
Yeah, I love Heath Ledger. I think the music in it is really good. An early Joseph Gordon-Levitt film, of course. And there's a lot of good humor, and the soundtrack is really, really good. I just can't stand Julia Stiles. I just can't.
Fair.
Yeah.
Fair. Yeah, there's a lot of... Yeah. Oh, could we have watched Save the Last Dance? Did that qualify?
I don't know.
No, that was 2002.
Okay, yeah, no, probably is.
That was the 2000s. Yeah. But
I guess that heralded the downfall of Julia Stiles, right? Because she was supposed to be able to dance by the end of the movie, but never could at any point.
But so we talked about 10 Things I Hate About You when we did Heath Ledger, right? Because you can tell even in 10 Things I Hate About You that he's a really good actor. Right. Even in the silly throwaway high school movie, that there's just like flashes of brilliant acting from Heath Ledger. But anyway, these are the movies we watched, folks.
Yeah.
So,
and we could have watched The Faculty. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we could have watched The Faculty. And these are the movies. I've never been more disappointed in our listeners or my fellow hosts or our guests. But that's the way it is. Roy, you shouldn't teach She's All That to your children. But I don't know. I could be wrong. I admit it. I could be wrong.
Well, bring the faculty back for Halloween.
Yeah. Like, okay.
Have an alien invasion.
Ooh, high school Halloween movies. That counts, right? We could do
high
that.
High school Halloween.
Yeah, it could. So, Andy, I'm going to tell you how we're doing next Halloween, because you know how we each had two categories and we let you guys vote?
Mm-hmm.
So we've decided that our losing one has to stay in next year's poll, and you get to add another category to that. So I think that means next year you'll still have a chance to vote for – what did you have, John?
Mine was – the one that didn't win was just straight-up documentaries, scary documentaries.
Yeah, horror documentaries.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh.
Yeah.
And I think mine was horror comedy, and I can't remember what Zoe had that lost. It was like 80s slasher sequels or something.
Yeah, I'm going to try to – I'll pick one that brings
I already know what my second category is going to be. I'm really, really excited about it. Okay. Either way.
Well, I'm glad I have a baseline movie, because I'm sad that we didn't get to talk about The Faculty. I'll just work that one in. Okay. Cool.
Watch
okay.
John Stewart gets stabbed in the eye.
Well, are you guys ready for some future business?
Time for future business. Okay, let's do it. Should we call Josh up? Okay, yeah, Josh is coming on next. Josh has to come on with three new movies that he has never seen.
Maybe three we've Curly seen Sue them. Movies yeah. he's never seen. Yep.
Maybe we've seen them, but oh, shoot.
Hello?
Hello!
Hey, Josh, buddy. How's it going?
Can you hear me? I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We can hear you.
We can hear you. It's good to Hooray! It's good to hear your voice.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Okay, so we were just talking. Okay, we need three new movies from you. I'm really excited. Are you excited to just venture into the unknown on this?
I've never been so fired up. At least that was the case until I finished listening to the last podcast with Caitlin.
Uh-huh.
Where John said that that he would quickly bump me if Caitlin wanted to come back on the show.
Whoa!
All right, I'm ashamed and I'm embarrassed, but I stand by my statement.
Well, then I'm going to stand by the change I just made to my number one movie.
Oh boy! Oh gosh, you got another Corey movie for us, don't you?
Well, my first movie. Are you ready?
Yeah, indeed. I'm ready. I'm ready.
Okay, first movie. It was going to be the 1968 Steve McQueen classic Bullet.
Oh. You've never seen Bullet. Oh,
I've never seen it. And so I was excited to see it. But now, thanks to John Madsen.
Oh, great.
Gonna kill you.
We will be watching the Lifetime original, A Tale of Two Corys.
Is that a movie?
It is. Yes.
Oh my gosh. All right. All okay. Right. I am sorry. I guess I've been humbled. Oh boy.
So stick is that Lifetime beauty in your pipe.
A Tale of Two Corys, and not starring either of the real Corys.
No, but it looked excellent.
Okay, but it's supposed to be them.
So it's a biopic of the Corys?
Like yes, the biopic about the Corys without the Corys. It was made in 2018.
Yeah, but it's a Lifetime original.
This actually, okay, I'm excited because ever since we watched Dream a Little Dream. By the way, I didn't say this on the podcast, but Empire Records, the thing I was going to say was kind of a lot of Dream a Little Dream energy in Empire Records.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of energy there. Just a little bit of energy there. But I've been searching for answers of Dream a Little Dream. Like, I'm just like, where are the answers? And if this movie provides me with answers, then I'll appreciate it. Yeah.
Oh, man. Is Andy on there?
Yeah. I am.
Hey, Andy, yep. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm glad I do not have to watch this Corey documentary.
Well, hey, by the way, that was a good podcast though. How did you guys get Caitlin on there?
Yeah, it was all Andy.
I just ran into her on Twitter. I was talking with some of my friends about how I'd never seen Titanic, but apparently I was going to for a podcast and people should listen. And one of my other friends is like, hey, you should invite Caitlin Durante to be on there with you. And I'm like, really? Would she? And then she showed up and she's like, I will totally be on your podcast. Yes, let's do this.
I felt really special. But in the last week, I've noticed that she has tweeted out the 10 other podcasts she has also joined since then to talk about Titanic.
Yeah. So I think she recorded her part of the podcast like a week, like last year, and she just pushes play.
You just press play.
And we just fill in the conversation because she's so used to it. Yeah. But
just kidding, Caitlin. Thank you so much.
She was hilarious.
She is.
Great. She was really hilarious.
And I do feel bad. We got to get to your other movies, but I do feel I forgot to tell you this, Andy. I have to apologize. I feel bad for you because you got her on our podcast instead of your podcast. And so it was a great gift to us. So thank you.
You're very welcome.
Yeah.
And my goal is now to be like, hey, remember when you talked about Titanic with me that one time? Do you want to talk about, like, I don't know,
A Tale of Two Corys
3?
Yeah. Moana. Yeah. Like.
All right. That was good. My favorite moment was I noticed it didn't get a big laugh out of Caitlin, but I enjoyed immensely that GR's desire for the movie to have ended with them doing a portrait of 100-year-old Rose with the with the heart of the ocean around her. The only thing that would be better is if, like, is if a 100-year-old Rose was painting Bill Paxton with the heart of the ocean around him.
Oh, I would like that. Yeah,
that would be great.
Oh man.
Okay, so movie number two.
Yes.
I feel like this is one I've wanted to see for a long time, so I thought this was the perfect place to do it. Spanish language classic, Casa de mi Padre with Will Ferrell.
Oh, my gosh. Wow, okay.
Wow.
I have not seen it. It's unusual. I assume it's unusual, but it's
just... Yeah, it's all in Spanish.
Okay, yeah. Weird choice.
Yeah. So...
2012.
I mean, not your choice isn't weird. I think it's just like the choice of making the movie is weird, but you know, it might be a classic.
it is probably not a classic.
Have you seen it, Andy?
I have. I saw it at South by Southwest when it premiered in 2012 or whenever. And I'm like, "Oh, this is a weird film. I wonder if anyone will like this."
Did Will Ferrell do the Q&A in Spanish as well?
I don't know, because I went to an off-site screening that didn't have any Q&A, so I wouldn't have to fight the crowds for the like Q&A one.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I know when I first saw the trailer, like however many years ago, you know, there was one part where Nick Offerman is like trying to talk to Will Ferrell, and Will Ferrell says, "No, senor, no hablo americano." And like ever since then, I knew I needed to see this.
Yep.
Wow.
So, okay. And then the third movie, I want to see if you can guess it, because this movie was once described to me as Stallone and the Fonz just walking around being sweet for an hour and a half.
The Lords of Flatbush.
The Lords of Flatbush.
You've never seen that?
No.
The Lords of Flatbush.
The Lords of Flatbush.
Roy, you've seen it?
No, but I'm aware of it.
Okay.
1974. This is, and Henry Winkler's in it.
Yeah, 1974.
Right? Okay.
It's just Stallone and the Fonz being sweet for an hour and a half.
You want to know what the tagline is on this poster? When was the last time someone gave you a hickey? That's the tagline for the Lords of Flatbush.
Holy cow.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
All right, Josh, so, I commend you're brave. This is a brave set, I would say.
Hey, John, we could have been watching Bullet. Thanks.
Sorry. I'm committed. I've decided I'm way more excited for A Tale of Two Corys than Bullet. I'm excited. I think it's the right choice. I think it's the right choice, Josh.
You do.
We got a lot of talking to go. Yeah.
I'm looking, like, I was kind of looking through the description right now, and like it seems like heavy on the abuse. So wow. Maybe I'm switching it back to Bullet. Can I switch it back to Bullet?
Oh.
I don't know.
Josh, I want you to be true to yourself. I want you to be true to yourself. So.
Well, but all of my joy for the Corys just comes from listening to you and John having to say the phrase the Corys on the podcast. Like, I don't know if it would be as much fun for me to be watching it.
We can call Steve McQueen the Corys if you want.
Okay. All right. Let's do Bullet.
We're doing Bullet. Okay. I might, if you watch A Tale of Two Corys, we'll mention it too. Maybe we can.
Is two L's, two T's, and with an I, spelled with an I, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Bullet. I've never seen Bullet.
I have seen Bullet.
I know there's a car chase in it. Yeah. Okay. That'll be good. Bullet, Lords of Flatbush, and Casa de mi Padre.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Good job. Wow.
Hey, it'll be fun.
It'll be good. It'll be good.
Bus. Hey, so Josh, stay on the line, because you might as well know what you're about to have to watch for your community service. Okay. And John and I already had kind of a discussion here, because I'm a little grumpy at how broad it is. But the winner is female director movies.
Mm. Usually I complain when things are broad.
So, yeah, keep it in mind. Well, keep it in mind, Josh, because you next podcast will get to choose one.
Okay.
Yeah, and so will John. So we'll see what gets us.
Now, I don't know if I should bring this up right now, but like, can we have three Catherine Bigelow movies, or would that just defeat the purpose of, you know?
Well, John, you're going to get to pick one. So, okay. If that's what you want, you'll get at least one. I'll just throw it out there now. I'm going to shove Selma into the poll so we can get some Ava DuVernay.
Okay, sure.
Take that.
Okay. I'll watch the Ava DuVernay Wrinkle in Time.
Oh, jeez.
Wow.
I heard that was really awful.
I heard it's really awful, but, you know, it's a Wrinkle in Time, so it's got to be a good discussion.
Maybe. I saw that movie. I kind of liked it.
I don't hate it, but it's got some problems. Hmm. Yeah.
Okay, well, a lot to talk about.
Tale of Two Corys has a male director. I thought maybe the stars were aligning.
Oh, that's pretty rough, huh?
Yeah. No.
Well, so you've got Penny Marshall, because I was also thinking the movie Big might be fun. But there's lots of stuff out there. All the Twilight movies.
Yeah.
So
lots to choose.
Yeah.
Literally lots to choose. There have been a lot more female directors than you think. Maybe not that many award-winning, but there's a lot of movies with female directors. So there'll be a lot of choices. Let's see.
You can watch Ishtar.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Elaine May.
Oh, yeah. Okay, we can squeeze it. Yeah, that was up for one.
That would be a fun one to watch, actually.
That was one that, Andy, you almost picked, right?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
So you might as well know that the category after that, there's no category for us to choose because after Josh's community service, we are bringing Mark back.
All right.
And we will get Mark's never-before-seen movies. So.
Yeah, he's probably got a pretty good list, you know, that's that he's business. Had for years. So that's the business. Okay. Well, and that's the podcast then.
That's the podcast.
Okay. Andy, we talk to you all the time, but it's going to be a while maybe before we talk to you on this podcast. But, you know, I should say it. And I don't say this enough. And Josh, I should say this to you because I said it to Caitlin. But, you know, you're not officially on for a while because this is your community service. But, I mean, if you want just every other Thursday, if you want to just ring up Skype and jump in, you can. And Josh, you're going to have to do it in the next 2 weeks. But, you know, after that, if you promise not to be mean to us, you can also, you know, join after that. You know,
thank you. I feel much better about the Caitlin comment now.
good.
Both of you friends, we hope to see you July 1st.
Yes.
In Salt Lake City at the Post Theater.
We should have said that in contact info. Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Yeah. You're making plans.
It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be great. We're going to watch three movies. The polls are up. Oh, vote in the poll. Because whatever wins the poll is what we're going to be watching. We might either be watching detective movies or Greek mythology movies again, which is a little thinner on the content than detective movies.
It's a little
movies.
Thinner.
Yeah.
Movies of future past.
Yeah.
And I think the other one that's currently tied is not wrestlers, but swords and sorcery films, which will be challenging to find three swords and sorcery films we haven't done that are not rated R.
Yeah,
we can show to a general audience that might include my parents.
Yeah, we're concerned about the general audience thing. So,
yeah.
So it'll be good no matter what, though. So,
yep.
Oh, I'm excited. I plan on being there all day with you three and the homeless guys who come around.
Yeah. No, we're going to need you there. We're going to need you there for crowd control, I'm sure. So,
well, we're going to have to keep people away from the Red Butte Gardens so they don't go and see Chris Isaak and Lyle Lovett the same night.
Oh, gosh. Okay, I might.
How dare
the choice
they?
Seems easy.
They've got some serious competition.
I wouldn't mind that show. I might have to. Well, we'll see. Okay.
Do they know? They might want to change their date.
They need to change their date.
Yeah, someone should let them know.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll call Chris Isaak.
That's the podcast. So, you guys, gentlemen, do you want to record anything? Anything else? Anything on the record before we go?
I just love you guys so much.
Oh. It's on the record, man. That's going to haunt you.
Andy, it's been so wonderful having you these last 2 weeks, and we look forward to having you again. I don't know what crazy gimmick we'll come up with next year. Josh can't wait to have you for the next month. We'll have a good time.
Yep.
Woo-hoo. Can't hardly wait.
Oh, yes. good wrap-up, good callback. Thank you. Thank you, Andy. Okay.
All right.
Damn the man, save the empire.
And he's all that. Okay.
Should we call Josh up? Okay, yeah, Josh is coming on next. Josh has to come on with three new movies.
Mm-hmm.
that he has never seen.
Maybe three Curly Sue movies he's never seen. Yep.
Maybe we've seen them, but oh, shoot. Okay, and here's the part of the podcast where I take it out of the podcast because, once again, Skype has hidden the bring someone on to the podcast button. It's around here somewhere.
Usually I can find it really easy.
It disappears. Like, whenever Skype is open for too long, it like disappears. It's weird. Chats, meet now, new chat. Okay. Oh, wait, is it this part up here at the top? On this call.